three cinephiles have come together to bring you strong opinions, controversial statements, epic battles, and plenty of fun.
Introducing our host,
the man who watches 52 movies a week, drinks 52 beers a movie, loves women but hates the woman, from the foreign land of Canada, our host, Mood616. He is widely known as the man who talks too much. His worst enemies are Postmaster P and Pee Wee Herman. He said Hellraiser was overrated and Leprechaun Origins wouldn't suck. He's the full-blooded half-Mexican, JP. Finally, we have the man who doesn't talk enough. He is best friends with Sean S. Cunningham. His favorite horror movie is Gummo. He is your favorite Jew and mine, Jeremy. Together, they are known for extending a helping hand to VampireCons everywhere. They are the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror.
Yes, yes, y'all. What's going on, everybody? It's the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror is back with episode 24. Yeah, what's up, guys?
What is going on, Mr. Moods? How was your week?
My week was filled with, let me see what the word is here. I don't know. I can't quite remember.
Strippers and combos?
Strippers and combos is a good indication of how my week went. Yeah, combos.
And beer.
Oh, man. So much drinking in Vegas, so much partying, so many titties. There was just, it was really, really busy. Like, we were actually going nonstop for basically 6 days. There was nights where I got back to the hotel room at 7:30, was up at 10:30, 11, and repeated. So I had a good week.
How hungover did you get?
I never really felt too bad until the Thursday. The night before I went home, I took it easy on that Thursday night. Ate some combos, watched a flick, and basically went to bed because I had to be up early to catch a flight. And I knew I had like a 9-hour layover in Calgary, so I was like, I don't want to sit in the airport.
9 hours? What the fuck yeah. did you do for 9 hours?
Watch movies and ate combos? No. No, I actually – no, went to Chili's and watched some movies. Just kill time, man. Listen to tunes. It was just the worst connection time ever. So
it's long, 9 hours.
So there was no way I was going to sit in the airport hungover, so I took it easy on the Thursday. So how about you guys? How was your week?
Good, Jeremy.
Oh, pretty good. Typical school stuff, you know. Same old.
Well, it was the first week of, you know, classes, right?
Well, second week. This is the third week, so.
Oh, yeah, second week. You're right.
Yeah.
Cool. How are they going?
It's going all right. You know, just finally getting grades back from every professor so you could, you know, see how they grade. I already have one professor that gave me my first bad grade ever in college, and it depressed me as shit the entire day today. But, you know, now I know.
What was it, a paper?
Yeah, or? But it was only – it's only worth 3%, but it's still like –
So what is a bad grade to you, like a B plus?
No, I got a C minus on it.
Holy shit.
I know.
That is a bad grade.
That is, wow. That's wow. Not that bad.
JP just doesn't know.
JP's like, that's a fucking pass. Come on.
Not really. You have to get a C to pass. C minus, don't pass.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I've never gotten a C in my life, so not in college, so. You know, I'm just, now I know that that professor is a hard ass, and I just have to, you know.
I had the odd bad paper and stuff, but I don't ever remember failing a paper or anything like that. So maybe C's or something, but
like I said, it's not like
very
a
far between.
It's not a major paper. It's only like a small, like page and a half, you know, paper that you have to write 10 of throughout the whole semester. So, you know,
what'd you write?
It was about block booking, which was the studios back from, you know, this is where I fucked up. I thought it only happened from after World War II until this case that happened between Paramount and the Supreme Court. But it obviously has been going on since film was created. And block booking is where the studios would go to different theaters and would offer them a large block of their movies, a few huge movies and a few little movies. And that would result in the big movies carrying the little movies. And this made the independent film industry go down the shitter because all these theaters have all these films from all these studios and they don't have anywhere to show all these independent films. So all the independent studios pretty much sued – or the country sued the five studios, you know, Paramount, RKO, MGM – all them, and said that what they were doing was monopolizing the industry, and they were found guilty, and black booking was considered illegal, and now that caused the independent film industry to boom in America, but it caused the box office numbers also to go down because more and more people were not going to theater. So, you know, it was a positive and negative thing to the aspect, but it was interesting, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So my week was pretty boring, but one thing did happen. I was waiting in the morning for my buddy to show up to go to work. We go to work together, and he drives to my house, and then we take my car to work so that I could practice driving because he has a license and stuff like that. So he never showed, so I was in a predicament where I either had to not go to work or drive to work. I chose drive, and when I got – I wasn't nervous at all, but then on the way home, I was, like, extremely nervous, and that was not a fun experience.
Yeah. That's yeah.
Yeah, I would be shitting my pants.
Yeah, last thing you want to do is get pulled over, then you're just fucked.
Yep. Yeah, it's not a huge, like, I think it's only like a 90-day suspension or something, but still, I don't
actually that. The worst possible thing that could happen there is you get into an accident and hurt somebody, and then you don't got insurance and stuff. And
well, I have insurance,
but
you don't have insurance.
It's in my name. Yeah, you can get insurance when you don't have a license.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That shit's expensive as shit, though.
I mean, because your permit still technically like works for that when you go to get your when you go to get your insurance. You know, you put your permit number because it'll be the same as your license number. And I mean, like it's a straight drive. It's not really that, you know, crazy. But I pretty much had to. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough decision, right? Like, you don't want to miss work, but
yeah, I was a supervisor, so I pretty much, you know, I have to be there. Didn't have no other way. But I'm feeling pretty confident to go take this license test soon. So
that's good. Alrighty, so we got some news, JP.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life.
Death.
Not some great news, but we have news.
That's better than no news at all, so.
Yeah, so first up, Todd in the Book of Pure Evil, which was that TV show you told me to check out, Moods?
Yep.
Yes.
And I still have them, and I never watched it.
I haven't watched
fucking,
it either.
It's so much fucking fun, man. It's great.
Yeah, it is a award-winning series that is now being made into a animated film.
Oh, it's animated?
A feature-length animated film titled Todd in the Book of Pure Evil, The End of the End.
Huh.
What's up with all these animated films with Jason Mewes? Like, they just made a Jay and Silent Bob animated film, and now they're making, like, I would assume Jason Mewes is going to be in it, but it's like, it's such a weird movie to animate, according to what Moods tells me about the TV show.
I can actually see it working as an animated film, though, because there's... They could probably do a lot of crazy things with the, you know, with the Book of Evil and shit. I think it could work, actually. Be interesting.
Yeah, it probably will. It probably has something to do with, like, maybe, budgetary reasons that they're going this route.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe no studio would, like, back an actual movie or something, you know?
Why not just make a season 3, man?
Well, I'm sure if that was an option, they would do it.
Well, it was trying to be an option, but... I don't know. Something happened. It was something to do with money and whatnot. And then I know there was a huge petition on the internet going on about the, you know, the fans really pushing for that season 3. And it for a while, it looked like it was actually going to work out. But
did they try crowdfunding? I thought I remembered they tried crowdfunding. I don't know if that.
I can't remember if they tried that for that show. but I do remember the huge buzz about it, and people were like really kind of getting into it, but I mean, it obviously didn't pan out, which really, really sucks. I mean, once you guys watch the show, you'll understand what I'm talking about. It's a pretty interesting premise, and you know, just kind of, it kind of creates like almost like an anthology show. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is scheduled for release in fall of 2015. So about a year away.
Jeez, it's a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it takes a while to do that. So
I don't have too much to say about that. I mean, it, I don't really like animated films, you know, horror or not. It's just not really my thing, but I'm interested to check out this TV show still.
Mm-hmm.
So next up, we have The Town That Dreaded Sundown. This film remake, I think, or I think it's like a sequel-ish remake thing or something.
Wait, did you see Orin Pictures is releasing it?
Yeah, Orion?
Yeah, that fucking made me smile so much when I was watching the trailer and the logo popped out.
Yeah.
Like, they're fucking back.
I did not watch the trailer because I've now decided I'm not watching trailers to films that I would consider seeing or would want to see. So no more trailers for me.
So it's not considered a full-blown remake? It's considered a
They reference the original film in the trailer. So I think it would make it like a sequel remake or something. I'm not sure.
From what I read, it was supposed to be, you know, like a more kind of serious take on the original film, but who knows?
I heard that it was also really like meta.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't watched the trailer. I've stayed clear of it. I know that this is, you know, in the future. So I'm just saying, fuck it. I'm staying away.
Yeah. So this
is kind of like you, man. I'm so sick of getting ruined by trailers and just
for sure. Talking. I can't stand it.
Yeah, it's really starting to bug me.
But this is supposed to be released October 16th VOD, I believe. And also, it is, you know, like Jeremy mentioned, it is the first film under the newly, I guess, not the, what would it be?
Reboot? Relaunch?
Relaunch. There you go.
Relaunch.
The relaunch of Orion Pictures. It's also a Blumhouse film, like Insidious and all those things. So, yeah, Town That Dreaded Sundown. I'm actually looking forward to this one in a time where there's not a lot happening this year in horror.
I didn't know it was coming out that soon. It's only a month away.
Yeah, there's actually a few films coming out that soon that...
ABC's of Death 2. And,
yeah.
See No Evil 2.
Yeah, there's a couple. So, yeah.
When is VHS coming out?
I think, in October also, or November, somewhere.
Yeah, this year has a lot of sequels, man. A lot of part twos, a lot of part threes.
Yeah, last year did too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool that it seems like the horror is picking a bit up towards the end of the year here, which is normally expected, but it's been pretty dead so far, so I'm looking forward to it. And next up, we have Wes Craven is producing TV now. Some news came out that Wes Craven is getting involved in television production. I forget for which network it was. I want to say it was the network that maybe owns Sci-Fi. So all those branches of that network, maybe. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really know how much of news that is. It's just Wes Craven's producing TV stuff now.
What else?
Just producing. Interesting.
Yeah, but I would think maybe that if he's producing, he might direct a pilot or something, you know. So it's always good to hear things from Wes Craven. I mean, Wesley Craven's getting pretty old. I wish he would direct at least one more film, so maybe this will give him the boost to get to that.
Maybe he will.
Yeah. After that, we have another Stephen King TV series is coming to pilot form. This is going to be called The Things They Left Behind. This is going to be a one-hour pilot. It follows one of his short stories, I believe. I think it's with the same name.
Yeah, it has to be. It sounds so familiar. I have so many of his anthology type books that I can't remember all the titles, but that does ring a bell.
Yeah, so it's being done by CBS, and I think it has something to do with somebody helping the dead finish up business, some like unfinished business or something.
I mean, they got to jump on this now, man. Under the Dome is, I think, doing really well.
Yeah, which so, I actually did watch the first, you know, like six episodes of the first season of Under the Dome, and I fell off, and I have not caught back up yet.
Yeah, I opted out of not watching it because I bought the book when it first came out, and I still have not read it, and that book is massive.
Yeah.
So I
think
mean,
it's his biggest, right?
Yeah, it's huge. It's just
that book is large as hell, man.
Yeah,
so big.
I really just wanted to, you know, kind of dedicate, you know, a certain amount of time to reading it. But holy shit, fucking TV show came out. And I was like, ah, come on. But yeah, I can see them jumping on that. I mean, his miniseries. I mean, in my opinion, some have been hits and some have been misses. So you never know what you're really going to get, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course. But I've always thought that there's so much of his material that needs to be adapted still that, you know,
down. There's so many short stories that need to be adapted into movies that he's done.
Somebody like, should just...
That John F. Kennedy one that he just wrote.
Oh, man.
Like that time-traveling one. Mm-hmm. I want to see that in the movie.
There's a few short stories in the... And I think Everything is Eventual... you know, short story novel that he put out a few years back that really, really need to be adapted. Like, there's some fucking good ones in there. Just,
I think they should.
They need to start tackling this.
Somebody should start a like anthology series that just adapts, you know, like three of his stories at a time, and just keep making sequels to it.
Yeah, kind of like a Tales from the Crypt type deal, but Stephen King short stories adapted into, you know, kind of hour movies. That'd be fucking cool because she's got so many. I mean, you could do seasons of this. It'd be awesome.
Yeah. So next up, we have more Stephen King news. This is the long-lasting project remake of The Stand. I believe we've talked about this since the dawn of our show. It's still being talked about. So they finally finished the script, and the person who's writing the script said that Stephen King absolutely loved it and he gave it a big approval. So they are moving forward. They won't start, they're starting prep now and won't probably start filming for another 6 to 8 months.
Coming.
And then the release date is in 2020.
Coming in 2017.
Yeah, really.
You have been waiting for The Stand. We're just kidding. It's coming out in 2020.
It is going to be a single movie, not a miniseries, and it is going to be around 3+ hours. So that is probably the way to do it. And I actually would agree that I think that this could actually use a remake. I have seen the original Stand, and I think it's a tad bit dated, and I think there's a lot more you can expand on because
it seems
like everything's so grand. Too grand for a TV miniseries, but it's still a really good watch.
Yeah, it's definitely dated. It needs an upgrade for sure.
You looked so serious when you said that.
I was just thinking because, to be honest, like, you know, the miniseries is okay compared to the book. The book is so much better than the miniseries.
But for a TV movie, TV miniseries, it was pretty cool. It was back when TV miniseries or TV movies were like events. And that is still, I think, the highest watched miniseries of all time or highest something of all time.
That's interesting. But yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to this this new version of The Stand. I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I believe I read that Matthew McConaughey is attached to star.
Really? That's kind of weird. I can't see him. He's kind of a big star now.
That's a big movie, dude.
He's an Oscar winner, though. I can't see him being in a Stephen King, you know?
There have been big Stephen King movies, dude.
Like what?
Well, Shawshank, this Stand By Me.
Yeah, Shawshank, yeah.
Look at Green Mile. Look at Misery. Kathy Bates, she's an Academy Award winner. Misery. James Caan, good actor.
I forgot she won for that fucking movie.
We have Kathy Bates late.
Yeah.
Next up is True North Trilogy. Kevin Smith on a panel announced that he is going to be doing a trilogy of films, which he is calling the True North Trilogy. The first film in that trilogy is Tusk. And obviously,
wasn't he not supposed to make any films? And now,
I think he has five films on tap, like five films that he has like scheduled. So yeah, so Kevin awesome. Smith isn't going anywhere. Basically, these are obviously going to be in a Canadian setting, True North. Tusk is the first one, which, oh, that's the other film that's coming out soon.
Is one of them the Christmas anthology film that he was doing?
Which I thought it would be. The second film in that trilogy is going to be called Yoga Hosers, and this is going to be like a PG-13, like, something. It sounds, I wouldn't even report on this if it wasn't for the third film. Because that yoga thing is definitely doesn't sound like horror. No. And the third film is going to be called Moose Jaws, which is described as Jaws with a moose, which sounds absolutely awesome. I cannot wait for that one.
Oh, man, that can only be a Canadian production too, right?
Dude, it moose sounds Jaws. Like some kind of exploitation. Like, fuck it. Oh, I don't know, man. It sounds cool to me, dude. I'd laugh when I read that. It's like Moose Jaws. And you're like, what could, like, I'm thinking that it could mean something else. And then I read, like, Jaws with a moose. It's like, it's exactly what it what it's describing.
And he's going to film that in Moose Jaw, the city Moose Jaw.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, right?
So Kevin Smith. And then after that, he has his Krampus film. The Anti-Clause, and after that he still wants to make Clerks 3, so he has lots of things on slate.
Yeah, it seems like Clerks 3 is now on the back burner, though. It's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah, he actually did say that that was, you know, after all the shit that he's doing right now, so that he'll probably sucks. Close his career with that one. I think that's what he's doing. Like, he was gonna do the Clerks 3, and then he like was like, well, wait a minute, maybe I should do more films. And then he's like, all right, I'll save Clerks 3.
So where did he ever come off trying to retire? Like,
well, he's going to make that hockey movie. He's not, that was going to be his last movie he ever makes. He's like, that's going to be it. So then, Jason Mewes one day was like, why didn't you make it into a TV miniseries? So he's like, oh, that's a good fucking idea. And that was the rumor going around that he was going to make this into a TV miniseries. And now he's making all these movies. And it's like, I thought you were only going to make one more movie.
Yeah, just like Rob Zombie wants to make that hockey movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's with the hockey movies, man? Come on.
Yeah, jeez, no.
Because hockey's fucking awesome.
So the next up is some more remake news. Simon Barrett and Adam Wingard is nearing a deal to write an English language remake of the film I Saw the Devil. For Snoot Entertainment.
Oh, you know what happened last time? Old Boy, and look how good that turned out.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it weird that these guys are doing that, though?
I don't give a shit who's doing it. It's still a bad idea.
It's just subtitles, people. Just read them. It's not hard.
Well, we talked about that early on in our series, and I disagree with the do not remake like foreign language films. So I'm not going to go down that route again, but I don't see why you would, why like these guys are doing it though.
Do you think I Saw the Devil needs a remake?
First of all, I've never seen the I Saw the Devil film, but I do know, and I've said this before, that people do not like watching foreign films if they're subtitled. Regular average people.
Lazy.
I don't think it's lazy. I think it is.
I think it's so Listen, lazy. Dude. I'm sorry, man. I get kind of freaked out when people are like, I won't watch anything with subtitle. I'm like, why? It's just words, man. It's not like they've never read anything in their life.
Yeah.
You know, it's just some words. Like, you're still staring at a TV. Yeah. I mean, is it the foreign people that they're freaked out about? I don't know.
No, for example, I have a good friend. He's not a big film fan. Mm-hmm. And if I came to him and was like, hey, dog, you know, watch this movie, it's subtitled, he'd be like, what? It's just has a negative vibe to it. Like, it's not, he's not lazy. He's a very intelligent person.
That it's fun.
It's just somebody who's not into film just don't understand it. So they immediately dismiss it.
But I know people that are like really, really into films, especially horror films, that will not watch subtitled horror films.
That's lazy.
it is fucked to me. And this is what I was referring to before.
There's so much out there. It's like,
I'm not talking about general people. Like, you know, if my sister was like, I don't want to watch that because, you know, stuff, I'd be like, whatever, because, you know, she likes Dan in real life. Fuck. But, that's an inside joke. But yeah, I was talking about like, you know, the hardcore fans or the people that claim to be hardcore fans, but they won't go outside of North America.
So yeah, like, I agree. How fucking about hardcore that. Are you? I mean, agree
I'm
about
I'm
that.
I'm not going to mention any names here at all, but there's this one person that I know.
No, and fuck that. Mention him.
No, I'm not.
Why?
I'm not, because people listening know this YouTuber. And I like him. I think he's a good guy, but I completely asked him one time. I was like, dude, what is the deal with you and no subtitles? And he's just like, I can't do it. He's like, I can't keep up and stuff, and it ruins the experience. And I'm like, well, dude.
Well, see, I mean, that's a little different, though. If they can't up, that's no, just.
But, like, he's, you know, he's not dumb or nothing. He's just only tried it, like, once. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, the first time you do something, you're probably not the best at it. I mean, the first time you watch a subtitled film, did you feel a little awkward? You probably missed words.
The first time I watched a subtitled film, I turned it off. I couldn't do it at first. So I kind of can relate to that. You do have to try it again, and you do have to get a film that's maybe not so wordy. I did Ringu, and I couldn't follow it, and I shut it off. Now, I actually, it makes me pay attention to the film even more sometimes. So I really enjoy them.
I honestly don't remember what I was watching, but I remember watching a subtitle film and going, fuck, these things are so fast. I was, you know, quite younger, but, you know, you just kind of develop a way, and there's actually a way to watch subtitled films, right? I don't know if they teach you that in film school, Jeremy, but I remember talking about it actually in one of my film classes about there is a certain way, because I swear most of the films that we watched that one semester were all subtitled films, so. You know, and right away people were like, oh, subtitles, come on. But then by the end of it, they're like, that was amazing, you know, so.
Yeah, like last night I watched a film with my cousin, and her mom, who's much older, you know, can watch subtitled films, but she absolutely cannot. She just doesn't even want to give it a shot, really. She's like, just doesn't get the idea of, like, why would I watch a film that I have to read? It's just a disconnect with people who are not into film. So I can kind of, like, that's my argument, is like, I think, like, if you, like, look at Let the Right One In, for example. Like, Let Me In did really, really well here, and it probably helped you know, whoever directed Let the Right One In's career go a little bit further, a little bit faster, and it probably got a handful of people to actually check out Let the Right One In after watching Let Me In. So I'm kind of all for that, and I don't think it really does any harm in remaking a foreign film. I'm not, like, pro remake either, but I can kind of get it.
Yeah, but I mean, that brings me back to the point of, you know, I'm talking about, you know, not the general people. I'm talking about the people that claim to be hardcore horror fans. And, you know, there's probably not a lot of people out there that can honestly say that they never heard of Let the Right One In, you know, before the remake came out. You know, like, I'm how many hardcore fans out there were like, Let Me In was, you know, their first, you know, idea with that. They had no idea about the original film. I mean, you guys obviously did, right?
Well, yeah.
Right? So, like, I'm just saying, you know, being a hardcore horror fan, I'm sure you knew about Let the Right One In. But as for generalization, you know, I can totally see people not knowing about that original film. But, I mean, I'm just talking about, you know, us.
Who's the guy who directed I Saw the Devil?
Oh, fuck.
Is it Chan-Wook Park? Did he do it? Or is that – okay. I just was – not. I want to make sure I was correct. Okay, so, yeah, I totally feel you. I mean, as a hardcore horror fan, you definitely should have heard about, you know, Let the Right One In and, of course, all the other foreign films. And you should watch them first. It would be wrong of you to go watch the remake first.
Well, especially films like that. They get talked about so much too. It's like, you know, if you're part of the, you know, this community or you're really into it and stuff, you most likely have heard about that. So, I mean, that's just where I'm coming from. I'm just having a hard time with people, and yeah.
I'm, you know, just because this news came up that it was getting remade, now I actually am going to go see the original, which I probably would have done anyway, but I probably will go see it sooner because now it's, you know, it's being remade. I don't know.
Yeah.
So next up – oh, good.
I was just going to, you know, kind of bug you a little bit about you not watching that movie already.
Is it a horror film?
A little bit. It's like it's a murder mystery type of a film.
Because I feel like that's why I haven't seen it yet. Because
it's fucking awesome, dude. There's one scene in a taxi cab that's one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen in my life.
It's really good. It's got a lot of horror elements to the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the structure of the film is not your average horror type film. But it's really, really fucking worth checking out. I know a lot of people have said that it's a little too long. I actually had no problem with the length. What about you, Jeremy?
No, that long movies usually don't bother me, you know.
I just sit
there anyway.
It was just interesting. I thought it would just kind of flow nice, but anyways.
Yeah, I'll eventually see it. I just usually the ones that are a little less horror, I get to a little later. There's so many like horror films to see that, you know, I try to get those out the way first. I don't watch a whole lot of like, you know, non-horror, but obviously this one's kind of related or at least close to the genre, if not in it a little bit. One foot in, one pinky toe in, something. So next up we have I Know What You Did Last Summer News? What is going on? What's going on, guys?
I still kind of knew what you did
going
last
on.
Okay, oh, God.
So, Sony Pictures is bringing back the 1997 I Know What You Did Last Summer for a remake.
What?
It's really funny. It's really
bad movies. And then next week they're going to announce the remake of Scream.
Scream
3. You know, Scream 3 is getting remade.
Like, I don't really. I Know What You Did Last Summer needs a remake.
It almost feels like it wouldn't even work today for some reason. It seems like really of the time, like the 90s.
Yeah, that's a really interesting tidbit of news. I don't get it. I honestly don't
get it. That's a weird one. But you know what? You know what, though, guys? And I did hear – I got this piece of news from Shock to Your Drop, by the way. But I was checking on Twitter after this news came out because I seen it from Twitter. And turns out that this little piece of news has been the highest traffic thing all day. And you know, it's pretty high. So, I mean, that tells you right there – what's really going on?
I'm actually almost speechless right now. Really, the highest piece of, you know, traffic news?
Ryan Tarek from over at Shock T Drop, the owner of Shock T Drop, tweeted out that I don't know what the heck's going on, but this is some, you know, high traffic for this news. So, yeah, I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, I clicked on it, but it turns out, you know, like, remakes do sell. This is a weird one to remake. I mean, I don't really get it, but it's high. Sources say that it's high priority, and they're really hoping to have it out and up and ready and out by 2016.
Man, I just can't wait to see the cast in this film.
I wonder if they're going to get like the big like stars like now, like the now big stars.
No way.
Well, they're going to go out and find a bunch of 27, 28-year-olds to play 16-year-olds or whatever. So who's about that age?
I don't even know how you tackle when I Know What You Did Last Summer remake. I mean, if I was going to do it, it just seems like one that I would just kind of do the same way. Like it like one of those pointless ones where you just do the same thing again. I don't really know. Like, it doesn't have much to like change. Like, there's not much to work with there. It's a really – like standard formula 90s slasher.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I mean, even the killer and the backstory is not that interesting, so you can't even really like flesh that out much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a clue what they're gonna do with it. I can't wait to see the cast, though. I'm curious.
I can't wait to just laugh at this. This is such a silly idea, but I will say I actually don't mind the original I Know What You Did Last Summer, even as cliche as it is.
Yeah, you know my thoughts on that film.
No, I don't actually.
I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. I mean, most people aren't. It really is kind of, it's almost like a kind of an embarrassing film. If you actually watch it and like try to analyze it, it's pretty embarrassing. It's really like, oh man, like I can't believe they made this choice. They're like, oh my God, it's kind of painful to watch, but I like it. I grew up, you know, I was like seven.
Jeremy, do you like this film? Do you like that film?
Hell no. I always make fun of it, you know? I kind of want to know what you did last summer. Is going to be the fourth film, you know?
I can already see the comments on this video. I'm going to get blasted again. Because every time I hate on I Know What You Did Last Summer, say in one of my videos or something, I get shit on.
Really? there's fans of this movie?
Fuck, man. Seriously.
I thought I was the only
one. I wish
I could
find the comments. I've had people going like, what do you mean you don't like the I Know What You Did Last
Summer?
It's
probably why
they're
remaking it.
It is a bad movie, guys.
It is really it's fucking not good. It's not good.
I like it.
I mean, I understand the appeal to some people.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Man, Jesus. Ugh. Anyways.
Yes. So after that, that's kind of like the last bit of like regular news. We got a couple DVD announcements. First up is Wrong Turn 6 Last Resort, which is hitting DVD and Blu-ray October 21st.
So is it actually going to be the last resort, though?
There's
no way.
I didn't really even understand the double meaning. I just like thought it was like a resort, like a place like that you stay or whatever.
Why?
I mean, I just kind of assumed last being the last one in the franchise, but last resort.
Oh, it's definitely not the last one, and I want it to be the last one because they're still numbering them, dude. That's got to be some kind of like impressive feat because normally by now they stop numbering them because they're embarrassed how many they made and they start giving them stupid taglines like
Resurrection. Aren't all the songs numbered?
No, they didn't number the last one. So okay, what, seven?
Yeah, the last Saw was called The Final Saw, wasn't it?
The Final Chapter. Like that.
But
the
then they, chapter. I think yeah. they, re- no, it was Saw 3D or something.
I actually saw it in 3D and it was fucking terrible.
Yeah, but, so I want I even to have the Wrong Turns forever.
I even still have the glasses that said I saw it in 3D first because saw it at like 12 o'clock, so they had like special glasses.
No, they didn't.
you kept those?
Well, they're cool. Collector items,
keep those, man. It says I saw it.
I saw it before anybody else.
That's really funny.
It's clever. But honestly, I like the Wrong Turn franchise.
They're, you know, I like them because it's like some are good. Some are bad, but I still look forward to the new one every time. It's like, well, even if the last one was bad, you're like, well, it got to be better than part three. So you look forward to
the
it.
Thing, like, I like three of the five films actually quite a bit. And I mean, this new one, I'm looking forward to seeing, but I like part five. I actually honestly did. I thought it was fun, man.
I like part four. Maybe this means it's time to do our Wrong Turn show but that I've been pitching since episode three of season one.
Yeah.
So yeah, Wrong Turn 6, pretty cool. I'll check it out eventually. Sharknado 2, the second one, is hitting shore.
Hitting shore.
I actually didn't come up with that. That was part of the news article, but I thought it said stores when I copied it down, but hitting shore. As never before aired extended version on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital HD October 7th. So October is becoming a pretty packed month with new releases.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. Halloween and stuff. Me and Jeremy were having a good laugh about that the other night. We're like, he's like, check this out, Sharknado 2. What the fuck? The extended cut?
There's so many weird movies on Amazon. It's not even funny. Me and Mooch were just like going down the list.
I was with y'all for a little bit then.
Fuck, man.
Some of those covers were literally like the worst thing. I can make a better cover.
Oh, I don't even get it anymore. It's just so bad. But yeah, the extended cut, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I never seen the TV cut, so.
Yep, and that wraps up the news.
That's it for the news, eh? All right. All right, so getting into another segment of Mood Swings. What do we got up first here? We're going to do the DVD Street Dates. I got to come up with a name for this. You guys have any ideas? Throw me a bone.
I'll think of something.
All right, yeah, but these are – yeah, this is the September 16th DVD and Blu-ray releases, some of the more notable ones that are coming out, so notable. I don't know if this was ever on Blu-ray before, but Dreamcatcher's coming out on Blu-ray. Was it on Blu-ray before?
I don't think it was, actually.
It's just surprising to me that that was never on Blu-ray. I don't know why I'm so surprised by this, but
yeah,
I'm surprised by that.
It is kind of surprising.
Then we got The Battery, which I'm really, really looking forward to checking out. Looks awesome. Looks really, really fun. And of course, that's a Scream Factory release. And then we got a bunch of Ghostbusters releases here. We've got a digibook of Ghostbusters 1 and 2, and I believe that is a 4K scan. So that's looking pretty cool. And then there's this awesome gift set that features the digibook with 1 and 2 in it, and then it comes with this awesome...
Slimer?
Yeah, it's like a Slimer on the Stay Puft Man. He's kind of, you know, wrapped all around him. It's pretty cool, but the price, man, it's like $90 or some shit.
$90
Yeah, I'm fucking not. Can I say something real quick? I'm not overly a huge fan of Ghostbusters.
Oh God, I love Ghostbusters. That's funny.
$90 for a set? That's worse than paying $14 for a 12 case of Surge on Amazon. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, I couldn't believe the price on this, man. I just didn't – made no sense to me. I just don't get it. But I don't know. People will pay for it because, you know, it'll be out of print soon. But and then you can also just pick up – I believe Ghostbusters 1, just, you know, separate Amory case Blu-ray, and Ghostbusters 2, which is finally getting a release by itself.
Now I want to bring up something that we were talking about also on Amazon about the Necromaniac Blu-ray that is
– Mantic.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
You know, my wonderful, you know, pronunciations of various movie titles. But I remember when it first got released, it was going to be limited to 2,000. Like, it said right on the front cover on a sticker, limited to 2,000. But now I'm looking on Amazon, and they changed the sticker that just says limited edition. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that they got rid of the 2,000, and now they're just releasing as many copies as they want.
You know, I thought about this. And I think it's a good marketing thing, actually, because, you know, they say, you know, limited to 2,000. They've already made up their mind. They're not going to number these things. So they put the pre-orders out there. The pre-orders have been out for a long time. I mean, it's been number one on Diabolik for a long time. I don't know if it's number one right now, but it was the number one pre-order on there for, like, a long time. And they probably made up that, and people were still wanting to pre-order it. So why not take the 2,000 off and sell more, right?
But they pulled a Nightbreed that Scream Factory did, man.
Exactly the same thing. Yeah, they upped that limited edition too, but...
Yeah, I didn't like that. That's the one thing I didn't like about that. But, or they just... Yeah, that's... I mean, what they did was they probably saw that, wow, like, this is getting a lot of coverage between the horror sites and Facebook and everybody sharing it. Like maybe they initially thought that they could only, you know, sell maybe a little over 2,000 copies or something, and now they realize, like, we could sell a hell of a lot more. Let's take this limited edition and make it a full release.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they little – I mean, I don't know if they underestimated themselves. I think they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, because that film kind of has a big following, so it's it really does. It's going to sell more than 2,000 copies. The VHS is and the DVD is fucking hard as hell to find, so it's like you know you're going to sell a lot of them.
Who's putting it out?
Epic. Oh, fuck, who's putting it out?
I could look.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know if I give those, like, people who run those companies like that much credit for actually knowing like what's gonna sell and what's not sometimes. So I don't know.
Maybe the company that's released.
Oh wait, they changed the sticker again. Now it says limited edition of 10,000 copies.
See? Yeah, they literally just pulled so it was more like what I was saying then where they realized like, oh crap, this really is selling. So they hired the restriction.
That's three times they changed the sticker on the front cover.
It's the same company that put out Deathbed on Blu-ray, too. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the fucking company. It's driving me nuts. But anyways, I'll move on.
Cult Epics.
It is Cult Epics. Okay, I just didn't want to say that. I thought I was wrong. So Congo is getting a Blu-ray release.
Is that a cool film?
I mean, it's you know, gorillas in the jungle.
A killer beast?
Yeah, I guess it can be considered a horror film. I haven't watched Congo in so long. But, I guess it didn't have a Blu-ray release before. And then we got season one of Sleepy Hollow on DVD and Blu-ray. I've yet to check this out. Have you guys checked this out?
Nope.
No episodes? Yeah, I actually haven't really heard anybody talk about it at all. So it must not be that great. Then we got Criterion's release of Eraserhead on DVD and Blu-ray. Super fucking excited for this. When Criterion announced that they were releasing Eraserhead, I was sprung, man. I ain't gonna lie. It's crazy. So I'm really looking forward to that. Then The Dead 2 is coming out.
It is.
DVD and Blu-ray coming out this Tuesday. I was really, really stoked, but I accidentally watched, I don't know whose update I was watching, but they said it was crap.
Yeah, and I've been like, hearing that too. I'm actually not even looking forward to it now because I was really high on the Dead 1. It was, it's in my opinion, it's one of the greatest zombie films of this era. So
it is definitely one of the better ones. Yeah, yeah, that's kind of disheartening a little bit. Then we got From Dusk Till Dawn season 1,
which I do recommend, guys. Pick that up. You know, support El Rey. It's a great TV station. Even if you're not sure about the show, give it a shot and support that, you know, that channel. It really is a great TV station that seems to really care about their audience and stuff. And to be honest, that show should have failed on all levels. And from what I've seen about the first couple episodes, I really enjoyed it. I know Rich from The Devil's Eyes is a huge fan of it, and I hear it gets batshit crazy as it goes on. So give that a shot. I will be picking it up.
Man, I cannot believe how many fucking horror-related shows that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like insane how many shows. I got so much catching up to do. Then we got another film called Disaster LA, Last Zombie, something, blah, blah, blah.
That sounds just like shit already.
It looks like shit, too.
It does. It really does. Then moving on to a film called Hazmat. Now, this one kind of, I don't know, the cover
to
looks
me, it
like,
looks like shit, too, because that cover, that dude in the hazmat suit, I swear to God, it's like the most popular cover to make something like that. I've seen like 3 of those at Walmart in the past like month. I actually took a picture of it and shared it on our group page. Like there's 2 films with orange lettering, like Halloween themed orange lettering hazmat suit. And I'm like, what the hell?
And well, yeah, like Toxic and something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it just annoys me because I'm like, I'm not buying fucking either one of these now. I was going to buy one of them, but now I'm not.
Yeah, it's released by Phase 4 Films, so it could be hit and miss.
I always pick up everything they put out. So
yeah, I'll so I don't even – I have no idea what it's like. It looks like a slasher fucking, I don't know, viral film. I don't know. Then we've got probably a release that a lot of people are going to be picking up. Dark Sky Films is releasing the 4-disc 40th anniversary edition of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
My favorite horror film.
Yeah, so this is like a super edition. I believe it's been knocked down. I think it's going for maybe 38 or something like that now. I know when the first pre-orders came out, it was fucking high.
I can't. Yeah, it was like 90 or something.
Yeah.
I can't get it now. I'll get it somewhere down the line, but I'm not going to grab it now.
I have seen the print.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking awesome.
Well, the last Blu-ray that Dark Sky Films put out looked fucking phenomenal.
I saw it at the drive-in, and it looked fucking amazing. Oh, I think everyone's going to be happy with it.
If this is this is an upgrade from their other Blu-ray, holy fuck. Crazy. Mm-hmm. And for the people that can't afford the 4-disc or just don't want to, throw away that much money, you can get the single disc one too, which I really don't like the cover art on that one, to be honest. I'm not going to lie.
I like them both, actually.
Yeah, I don't know, something about that.
Isn't kind there like a bigger edition too that is like a car or something?
Oh yeah, the rig edition I think is
Jesus
roughly Christ. Going 100 over 100. Last time I seen it was like 100 and something bucks or whatever, but that's an insane edition.
Yeah, I'm not grabbing that, that's for sure.
What, does this come in the bus and it holds all the other DVDs?
To me, honestly, those sets never really like interest me that much. Like the ones that are like shaped like something or that like fold out like an alien head or something. Like it just looks like it takes up way too much space for my small ass room. So I'm just like, yeah, I'll just stick with the simple edition.
Man, I can't lie how many times I was actually going to buy the chainsaw edition from Germany.
Yeah.
I was going to buy that so many times. And every time I'm like, man, that thing's going to get fucking damaged on the way over here. But I never did buy it. So, next up we got, finally getting released on Blu-ray, the 30th anniversary of Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Which some people already got their copies.
Yeah, some people already have them. Yeah, some people are posting on the podcast.
You picking this up, Moons?
You know what? I am going to grab it because it's cheap. It's actually really cheap on Blu-ray. And I was like, okay, why not? I think it's only like 15 bucks or something like that. And I was like, whatever, man. I'm curious to see the print.
I'll sit on it till Christmas. I'll grab it around there. Yeah. I'm not a huge rebuyer, but I do really love that film.
Bobby's joking about this with Jeremy, actually. I was, when it first got announced, I'm like, really? I need another edition of Silent Night, Deadly Night? Like,
how many do I fucking need? You know what's cool, though, man? Fuck. Like, 2 years ago, you couldn't even get it, like, at all. I know. It was out of print as hell. So it's cool now that there's, like, multiple ways to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next up, we got a Blu-ray release for Wanna the Dead. Fucking funny-ass film, man.
Yeah.
And All Hallows Eve, which you all should pick up.
That was last week. No. Yeah. You're right. No, wait. No, Hallows Eve.
Hallows Eve's a different one, yeah.
All Hallows Eve.
No. And All Hallows Eve came out last week.
Yeah, that was in the double pack with Mischief Night.
That's right. We talked.
But Hallows Eve comes out this week.
Yeah.
That's so fucking confusing.
I know. Fuck. I don't know why they do that. Multiple films with like very similar names.
They try to
confuse
people, man.
Yeah. And then we got Hannibal Season 2, which I've heard really, really good things about Season 1.
Zach is a big fan.
Yep. So, and Season 1 you can pick up on DVD for really cheap. Like, it's like 10 or 12 bucks. It's like super cheap. But yeah, Hannibal. And then we got Godzilla. Godzilla's coming out this fucking Tuesday. Who's excited?
Not me, because it fucking sucks.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but
this movie I've heard so many different.
Does it really suck though? I just can't almost see like how it will suck. Like it's real big.
You can't see Godzilla at all. He's like Leprechaun Origins. That's how bad it is. Not like bad, but it's like you can't even see him. He's in the background like always, and it's like,
and you know,
he's dark. And he doesn't show up until
halfway. Honestly, like, all those negatives don't sound like super negative to me if done right.
But it's not good. I didn't like it. I saw it on IMAX, and I didn't like it.
See, my problem is with them not showing Godzilla too much in the film or not showing him at all is that if you watch the older Godzilla films, there's nothing but Godzilla in the films. It's like some dude bouncing around in a suit.
I don't know. The first one, they really kind of kept him hidden a lot.
But you still see him. He's still there, right? Yeah. I mean, I've heard in this one you barely even see him at all, which is kind of
I'm like thinking like Cloverfield-ish type stuff here, like, because they didn't really show that monster that much. I thought it was effective.
Yeah, I think totally different type of film though. I mean, it's Godzilla, right? Like, just show him. We know what he looks like.
But look at all those Godzillas. They're all different film. Like, the first four are like completely different by the fourth one. I was like, what the fuck's going on? So to have like another different one, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Godzilla, so I don't really care either way. I probably won't even pick this up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be grabbing it eventually, but of course, for all you hardcore Godzilla fans out there, there is multiple editions. You got Godzilla in 3D, yeah, fuck, and then you got your Blu-ray DVD combo, of course your DVD, and then there's like a special limited edition metal pack that you can get too. Yeah, whatever. I'll go for the standard Blu-ray, probably. Maybe even DVD, I don't know. And then we got Dark Fields. I don't know anything about this. You guys know anything about
movie? Dark Fields?
Yeah, Dark Fields.
No, I never heard of it.
But the thing is, it's got like Richard Lynch in it, Dee Wallace, David Carradine, obviously a post-human release for him. But yeah, it's got, you know, a few people. I haven't heard anything about that movie, so thought it was interesting. Then we've got Hallows Eve, which I have heard
is Daniel Harris in that?
Yep.
Yes, I have heard not good things about it, but
it's a Halloween themed movie, I assume.
If it's $1.50, I'll pick it up.
You know, eventually it will be, right?
Who put it out?
Dude, that is definitely one that will end up on the family video shelf. It just looks like it.
Oh, wow. I didn't notice, but Tiffany Shepis, my girl's in there. Yeah. It's an E1 release, so
they'll have it for sure.
Yeah, you'll definitely be getting that. Nice. Now I want to get it. And then we got House of Bodies, another film.
That one has – I have that. That has Terrence Howard and who else is the other guy in it? The old guy with white hair and a beard.
There's a lot of releases this week.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, I had that movie on DVD. That one's put out by E1 too, I think. Yeah.
I do have a couple more here. There's another film called Asylum of the Dead. I don't know if that It probably intrigues Jeremy because it actually takes place in an asylum hospital type deal. So, yeah, found footage type asylum film. It's probably
one of them. Looks terrible. Awful.
Yeah. I just picked this one up called It's like House of the Dust or something like that.
Oh, dude. I saw that the other day. I saw that the other day at the HMV, and I was like, I was laughing at the cover, and then I shit you not, I went home and you posted a picture of it. I fucking laughed even harder.
I picked up a Family Video and I turned it over, and it said, the first word is, in an asylum. So I just bought it. I didn't even read the rest of the fucking the synopsis until I got to the bottom, and it says, and the evil force possesses them. And I was like, oh, fuck, I bought a possession film. Now I'm all mad at myself.
And then actually this one right here looks pretty damn cool in my opinion. It's called Evil Feed. I mean, at least the cover art looked fucking cool. I'm assuming it's some type of demon film, which I love demon films. And then we've got a film called House of the Witch Doctor, which sounds intriguing. Witches in a house. again, so. But that is going to do it for the releases that I know about this week.
Yeah, you guys there's have any others? A few. There's one called Arrow. I'm not sure how horror that is. There's also one. Grimm, the season 3 is coming out. Proof of the Devil, which I don't know what that is. And did you say Saving Grace?
I did not say Saving Grace, actually. But I actually had it written down and I totally missed
it. Is Evil Feed that one where they box and if they lose, they get taken into Chinese takeout food?
I really hope it is, because that sounds
that does
amazing.
Sound pretty cool.
Wait, let me read you what it says, because I remember
it's a brand new film.
Yeah, it says and the Long Pig, an exclusive underground restaurant that caters only to the most adventurous of eaters while providing top flight entertainment and the most exotic of meats. Each evening is accompanied by furious cage fights to the death to ensure only the freshest of ingredients. Two men enter, one course leaves.
Well, it makes sense. Evil Feed, right?
Yeah, that sounds maybe. Yep.
I gotta grab that shit, man.
And the last release that I seen was Anchor Bay's putting out a 4-pack, a vampire 4-pack with the Embrace the Vampire, Let Me In, The Thirst, and Slayer.
Yeah, there's a lot of those 4-packs dropping these days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like almost every week, there's like a couple new ones and stuff. So
there's nothing interesting in that. To me, the only time a 4-pack is interesting is if it has a film that you can't get anywhere otherwise, like Psycho, Bates Motel 1.
So, that's generally exactly why I buy those things too. Mm-hmm. I'm like Jeremy. I'm not a big fan of
this one. Does say it's 4 discs though?
Well, that's all right then.
That's interesting.
And I actually own any of those films, so shit, maybe I will grab it.
Well, you were talking about saving your ass some room, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true, because I used to despise when they would stick, you know, 4 films in one case, but I'm starting to enjoy it now, especially like my Final Destination Nation set that has the 4 films all on separate discs, but it's one case. I can deal with that, man.
That's not bad. Not bad.
So yeah, that's all the ones that I know.
It's better than Mill Creek putting all 9 Puppet Master films on one disc.
Fucking incredible, man.
It is.
Like, that's incredible.
It's like a magic trick.
Like how compressed could we get these to fit it on this?
They're spending like $50 million like scientifically figuring out how to like compress files like into each other, like
fucking David Blaine's working over at Mill Creek for him and shit. Yeah. And he's like, pow, 9 films on one day.
They're like, if we spend $50 million on figuring this out, then we'll save like, you know, $49 million later or something. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's all I got for the releases too. A lot of fucking potential money being spent this week. Shit. There's actually quite a few of those I want to pick up. So, all right. So now we're going to get into a discussion about these awesome subscription boxes that everybody seems to be making videos about. JP, you want to tell us about these?
Well, yeah. So subscription boxes are essentially you pay a monthly fee, just like any subscription, and you get sent a random box of horror type goodies. And the subscription can vary between the companies that you go through. I know of two. There is the Box of Dread put out by DreadCentral.com and the Horror Block, which is, I believe, a expansion of the Nerd Block, which I'm not familiar with the company. But yeah, so these things are kind of new. You know, this is like a new thing that's going on. They seem to be taking off a bit. I personally have tried it once with Dread Central's Box of Dread. and I got a Puppet Master or a Full Moon themed box. That's why I got it, and it came with one DVD, I believe it was Doll Graveyard, a poster, a deck of cards, something else, some stickers. And honestly, I gotta say, I kind of almost don't like these things. And it's not because they're a bad idea. They just give out shit that I don't want. So what do you guys think of them?
I don't know, man. I'm a little torn because I like the – what is the one that has the Rumor magazine in it?
I actually haven't tried that one yet. That's the Horror Block. But I think that one is pretty cool looking.
Okay. For me, it would be a waste of money because I already have a subscription to RuMorgue, so right there, it's not really worth it. But I've been watching people unbox these things, and they're getting quite different monthly. I believe You and Your Horror Movies, also known as Matt, I think he just did a video a couple weeks ago or whatever on one, and I was like blown away by it. There was lots of good shit in there. So I think it really varies on who.
It was like an Alien shirt, a RuMorgue magazine, and there was something else.
Yeah, there was a couple.
It's like a Saw figure or something, like a Saw action figure.
Yeah, there was like actually some pretty good shit in there, and I was like, wow. And then just, I was like, well, I guess it really depends on who you're going with on these. So
a lot of companies are doing this now, even for the video game community. Yeah. Well,
that's been going on for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something called Loot Crate that's been coming out for like since like April, I think.
Yeah.
Every month they just put a whole bunch – they have a theme, and every month they just put a whole bunch of random shit in the box. And
I remember hearing about like an art supply one like 2 years ago from an artist, and I know that they do like the 420 box and the you know, the ganja box. There's a bunch of these different ones, but now they're starting to like leak through into the horror world, and I'm getting really excited, but at the same time – I get my box of dread and I got a deck of playing cards and like shit that I don't want. I don't like collectibles and stuff like that. I've never got into them and they just take up space to me. So please, somebody out there, make a box that only has like RuMorgue magazines or Horror Hound or Fangoria or whatever, shirts and stuff like that and DVDs. And that will be a fucking awesome box. And I know that it's possible to do the DVD thing. If you made a box only with random DVDs, it's possible. Say you charge $30 a month for it. You put in, you know, $24 worth of stuff, you know, and, you know, sometimes you get a good box. Maybe there's a badass like Scream Factory and like a DVD or something. Sometimes you only get, you know, like $2-5 DVDs. It's a gamble. But if you balance it out, dude, you could do it and it would probably make a lot of money. Would you buy it, Moods?
Hell yeah, I would buy that. It'd be awesome. I'm not much of a, you know, figure collector and other types of swag and stuff, but as for like, you know, magazines, DVDs and shirts and even stickers though, like I love stickers.
Yeah, stickers are dope. I was happy with my like subspecies sticker. I like that. And actually I got a comic book in there, which I actually did like that too. It was the
See, comics is cool too.
Big Trouble in Little China comic. And comic books, what are they? Like a dollar something? You throw one of those in there, man. I think if I had like, you know, $10,000 or something to start my own box, I probably would because I think that my box would be a lot better than their boxes.
So how many companies are actually doing these?
Two that I know for horror. There's hundreds for other things, but two for horror. And all it is math, right? You just got to make more than you spend. So you just have to even it out, but you know, and then they also are getting people to sponsor the boxes like Full Moon. So Full Moon probably cut them a deal on merchandise to put in their box. And then, you know, I seen one with, something else that did one.
But in fine print at the bottom of the contract, it said in 5 years, you have to give Charlie Band $100 million. Tiniest print on the bottom of the contract.
Or it was like Charlie Band owns 51% of your company in 5 years.
That doesn't make – I mean that makes perfect sense that, you know, Full Moon is sponsoring these things because they have their own – what do they call those mystery boxes that you can buy at
Full
Moon?
Yeah, which are cool too because they're mostly DVDs. But what sucks is I got this because I was like, okay, well, like 90% of everything Full Moon sells is DVDs. So like chances are there will be more DVDs in this box than anything else. And then I get one DVD and like playing cards.
Yeah, that's random.
But no, I'm not going to hate on the box too much because I did like it. You know, it was only like $25 or something. Like, I didn't feel ripped off. It's just, I know that somebody can make a better one. And as long as somebody can make a better one, I'm not going to be satisfied with these ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants a box just full of flicks.
Yeah, I like the gambling, like, randomness of it. I would, if it was all DVDs, I would stay subscribed to it forever because it would be so exciting to get it in the mail and just be like, I wonder what the hell's in here.
Exactly. And there's probably lots of people that share the same thoughts too. You know, they don't want a lot of the swag and stuff. Like me personally, I don't mind. Like I love watching videos and stuff where people are showing off their, you know, their figures and stuff. But me personally, I honestly just don't have the room for it.
Yeah,
it's not that I dislike that type of stuff, and I'm not going to start collecting. Like it's expensive too. It's another
thing to collect. I mean, I just don't need that right now.
Yeah, but you know, my main focus is like, you know, films and shit like that,
and like posters. That would be cool. Yeah, posters.
Posters. But you know, as for the other stuff, I think they should just, you know, give people this option. You know, you want this type of box, it's going to have all this type of swag, or you can get B. You can go to door two. And then you can just, you know, go for some just films, you know.
Yeah,
and maybe to like that other person that's kind of boring, but
there was a time when Dread Central, the box of Dread, came out and they one of their sponsors for their box like dropped out like last minute, so they didn't have enough stuff to put in their box. So they went and bought a bunch of like random DVDs, and they put that in their box, and they were like, yeah, we was unsure about putting DVDs in the box. We, you know, we might try it again in the future. We're like, what the hell are you talking about? What is horror fans? They're fans of films. They're not fans of like toys and shit. Like the your whole website is based on, your whole website's based on like horror news, which is essentially 90% like film news. So I don't understand like why we can't get like more films. To me, it seems like the obvious go-to thing instead of all this swag and stuff, but it seems like nobody's like doing it. And I don't like, am I missing something? Is there more collectors of like toys and shit than I know of?
I mean, I don't think there's people that just collect horror toys and shit. You know, they obviously collect films and stuff, but you know, I can think of quite a few people that have like massive figurine collections and have massive DVD and Blu-ray collections too. You know, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. So
I mean, who's going to make the box then? One of you guys out there better make this shit.
Well, why don't we go into a three partnership?
Yeah, we'll make our own damn 22 shots box, and it'll be
I could go to Family Video and buy all the DVDs, and then
yeah, dude, we could fucking do that.
That's awesome, man.
Like they had like a million copies of your next, so I could just like go buy all the copies of your next.
I mean, it would. I guess it would also depend on like if you can give out used shit, you know. So that would kind of be a issue. But I mean, I'm excited for horror boxes, subscription boxes. I hope that like more of them come out because the one that I got was really fun to open. I was so excited to see what was in it, and I knew if there was like more chances of it being like films, you know, because you think if you're spending, if it's a $30 subscription box, and you give, you know, you can put, you know, $28 in this one, and then, you know, like, you know, $22 of merchandise in this one, and so on and so on. Like,
but you have to have one that has like $50 worth of stuff.
Yeah, and then one that has maybe like $15 worth of stuff. Yeah, that person's going to be bummed out that month, but the idea that you can get something better the next month would personally keep me involved in it. It would just be shitty if I got a $15 box every damn time for like 3 months. I'd be pretty pissed. But, yeah, you know. I think it would be great. People, this should happen.
Yeah. Do they ship to Canada? Probably not.
Yeah,
they do, like, but it costs $74.95 plus tax.
No, I think they do ship to Canada, and I think it's only a couple dollars more, to be honest.
No. Well,
how much does Full Moon cost you moves to ship to Canada?
It's like 30 bucks or some shit.
It was – I think it's around – it was like 27 bucks a DVD or something like that. It was actually so high, I started pissing myself laughing at the checkout. I was like, what the fuck? I can't even imagine what one of those, you know, those boxes cost. Jesus. It's so fucking stupid.
Oh, I'm going to buy six DVDs during their half off sale. You go to the checkout, it's like $878. You're like, what the fuck?
It, you know, that's exactly what it is, dude. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, done with the subscription boxes?
Yeah, I just think it's something to pay attention to. Maybe it'll get cooler. I'm excited for the future of it.
I think it's a good idea. All right, so we got we had a few questions from last week. Not a whole lot. Gotta say, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get more questions. But
you hear that, guys? We're disappointed in you. That means we need to bring it next week.
But you know, in the past, we've had lots of different questions and whatnot and stuff. So I'm going to start with what was the our top. Yeah, I can't even find her.
Anymore. I have the questions if you want me to go with
them. Here we go. From Joey Carrington. He said, what are your top favorite movies to watch around Halloween time?
Did he say top 10?
Top 10 films to watch. Oh, my God. And it wasn't Halloween-themed films. Hmm. It was top 10 films just in general. Yeah. I will go first. Basically, I mean, I could list off hundreds of films I love to watch around Halloween, but I'll keep it simple. The obvious choice is Halloween 1 through 3. I love watching all three of those films. Most times when I watch the original Halloween film, I watch the sequel right after because it just feels like one big ass film to me. Mm-hmm. And then I have no choice but to watch part three because I adore part three. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So those are three that I love to watch. Night of the Demons is another one. It's a Halloween-themed film, but it's just fantastic to watch around Halloween. It's perfect. You know, everyone's dressed up and demons and fucking amazing. Got to go with the other obvious choice, which I do actually watch every year. My wife even loves this film too. Trick or Treat is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Another obvious choice is Creepshow. I do it every single year. I watch Creepshow. I love it.
Why is that an obvious choice?
I don't know. For some reason, I just thought when I wrote it down, I was like, oh, well, that seems a little cliche. Yeah. I don't know. But I honestly do. These were the first ones I was thinking of. So I tend to watch Pumpkinhead a lot in October. Return of Living Dead, which doesn't really matter what month of the year.
You know,
but
that's so weird. That one is one that, you know, I usually watch during that time too, but I did leave it off my list.
And then I said anything Friday the 13th. I find Friday the 13th films the fucking coolest to watch around Halloween for some reason. It's just, I don't know. I love watching them. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, my favorite time of the year to watch that film is around Halloween. It's just it's awesome. Dawn and Day. I mean, these are two films I can watch all the time, but around Halloween, I love it. It's great. One of my favorite ones that I remember watching over and over and over again, wore out my VHS, was The Evil Dead. It's a great film to watch around. This was an interesting one. I started thinking. I was like, oh, man. Yep. Got to go with this. Tales from the Crypt episodes.
Ah, good choice, man. Good choice.
So basically what I've been doing the last, you know, few years is I've been watching just random episodes throughout, you know, the entire month of Tales from the Crypt. It's fucking awesome. And I got to go with Fright Night because that's another film that I honestly watch every year. So... But I'm pretty sure that's 10. It was probably way more than 10, as usual. But, yeah. Jeremy, you want to go?
Sure. So I got, of course, Child's Play 1 and 2. Sometimes 3, it matters. But, of course, the first two, always got to do it. Favorite horror franchise ever. So I always watch those. I also had Halloween 3 on my list because Halloween 3 is amazing. I mean, I watch Halloween 1 and 2 sometimes. If I'm in the mood, I watched them all last year and did them on my, you know, 31 Days of Horror, which I'm hoping to do again this year. Maybe you should do it too.
Moods will never be able to do it, probably.
But Halloween 3, Return of the Living Dead, of course. I got Satan's Little Helper, which is a Jeff Lieberman film, which is hilariously and gorily awesome. Everyone should watch that movie. It's funny as hell. House of 1,000 Corpses.
That's a good choice. That's a great choice. I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah. And The Devil's Rejects, Dawn of the Dead, and Hobo with a Shotgun.
Interesting. I actually really like this question because it's, you know, getting around that time, and it made me, like, get excited to, like, pick out the films that I'm going to be watching this year. But so what basically how I did my list is these are films that I have watched multiple times in the past, you know, couple years. So these literally are the ones that I watched during Halloween. Number 10 is Graveyard Shift. These are no like particular order except for the last three, because those are ones I watch every year no matter what. So number 10, Graveyard Shift. For some reason, this one always seems to find me during Halloween or October. It just, I don't know. It's always on AMC's Fear Fest, and I just feel like it has that vibe to it.
It's got great atmosphere.
Yeah. Number 9 is Pet Sematary 2. I always watch this one during October. It's usually on AMC Fear Fest as well. And it does actually have – it is set in the fall. Like there is a Halloween scene in that film and stuff. So, you know, that definitely has some atmosphere. Number 8 is Blair Witch 2.
So random.
No, because it's like in the woods with crunchy, you know, orange and brown and red leaves and stuff. Like it feels like – fall to me. And I love Blair Witch too. Number 7 is Ginger Snaps, also set around Halloween time. Great film for that. Number 6 is also on Mood's list, is Pumpkinhead. This is one that I always gravitate to towards this part of the year. Number 5 and 4 is two Clive Barker films that I, for some reason, always seem to find me during this month too, and that's Hellraiser and Candyman. I think both of those films kind of fit good in the holiday of Halloween. And then the number 3 is Night of the Demons. Of course, to me, that's one of the best to watch during Halloween. Number 2 is Halloween 1 through 9. I watch them all. I watch all 9 of them sometime during October. I have for the last 2 years, and I will continue that tradition this year.
So you torture yourself every year with Resurrection?
Yes, but wow. I gotta be honest, I usually catch Resurrection when it hits the marathon on AMC, because they do the marathon. I usually have it on at work. So yeah. And then number 1, of course, is the film that I watch every Halloween, that is Trick or Treat. It replaced Halloween. To me, this is the best film to watch on Halloween, hands down. That's my list.
Cool. I actually completely forgot that I had Pet Sematary written down. It was actually cut off the page. But you had Pet Sematary too. That's a very interesting choice.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So kind of flipping the script a little bit. There was a question on here. Wow, I'm just really.
Top five favorite non-horror films.
I was trying to remember the name. Critical Mike.
Yeah.
Ask, what are your guys' top 5 non-horror films? I don't believe we've had a question that had anything to do with non-horror films.
But this is a good question. I think it's something that we need to talk about, because we've never talked about.
Yeah. You know, this for me, this was a really, really fucking hard question.
Yeah, same here. Like, it's like a lot of movies I like. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I was really trying to – I kind of went in my film room today. I was looking at the non-horror stuff, and I was like – and then it just like hit me. I was like, this actually isn't as hard as I thought. But I mean, really, to break it down to top 5, like, I mean, these could be, you know, these are in no order except for the first one. But yeah, there's just so many good movies. Number 5, we've got The Breakfast Club.
Ooh, you're going to be surprised.
It's a good one. Like I said, these are not in, you know, these are could be, you know, in any type of order. Number 4 is Trains, Planes, and Automobiles.
Not a John Hughes classic.
John Hughes to me was – it was a voice of my generation. It was just fucking – I grew up watching John Hughes movies so much.
I grew up watching John Hughes movies.
I think,
same
I think
here, because everyone takes place in Chicago and it's fucking awesome.
Exactly. I mean, it was just – man, fucking best. Number 3 is Labyrinth. What can I say, man? I love David Bowie's balls.
Okay.
No, I love Labyrinth. It's a joke with
– I haven't seen that.
It's one of my favorite films. Great fucking soundtrack. Just fantasy. Jennifer Connelly. What else can you ask for? Number 2, Back to the Future. I remember seeing Back to the Future in the theater and like just being absolutely fucking blown away by the film. I thought it was the coolest film ever. And number 1 – most people know this, and that's The Goonies. Yeah. The Goonies is my favorite horror film, or non-horror film of all time.
I do that all the time. I always say that. I'll be like, it's my favorite horror. I mean, no, wait, because we're so used to talking about horror.
Yeah.
Am I going next?
Yeah, you can go ahead.
All right. Number five. These are in order, by the way. So these are in order. Mine number five is Harmony Korine's Gummo, of course, which is in the intro.
Which is your favorite horror movie.
Yeah, right. This is an awesome, experimental film with a lot of social insight into a community that's devastated by a hurricane. It's fucking awesome. Check it out. Number four, Kevin Smith's Chasing Amy, which is my favorite in the series of Kevin Smith's films. Number three is The Goonies, which is just awesome. I watched that movie a million times growing up. Number two is Tim Burton's Ed Wood, which I've talked about also on the cast before. And my number one favorite film of all times, horror and non-horror, is The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Nice. Good, good, good. Okay, so my top five non-horror films, these are also in order. They have been this order for a long time, I would say. Maybe one or two of them switched around, but these have pretty much been the same five. For a long time. Number five is Goodfellas. This is a movie that anytime I'm flipping through the channels and it's on, I'm watching. I love, love, love me some Goodfellas. Number four is Terminator 2, which to me, it's my favorite action film. Sci-fi. It is fucking fantastic. I can watch it all day. Number three is, I would say the Back to the Future trilogy, but I'm going to get, since, you know, I that would be cheating, I'm just going to say Back to the Future 2. I like Back to the Future 2 a little bit more than the first one, but it's almost hard to do that because they're all film.
I kind of like the second one a little bit more than the first also, but it's still pretty good.
They're both fantastic, even the third one. Like, I love this series. To me, it's the greatest trilogy of all time. And
it's mine.
I mean, these are amazing movies. You cannot tell me that you watched Back to the Future and don't like it. It's impossible. And then number two, Full Metal Jacket. This is the film I've seen more than any other film in my entire life. I probably have seen it over 100 times. It is literally, I can recite every line as it's happening. Every single line.
I'm like that with The Breakfast Club too.
And then number one, of course, is The Goonies. This has been my favorite film since I could remember. I seen it for the first time when I was very, very, very young. And this is probably the second most watched film in my entire, life. I watch it a couple times a year, and it's probably going to eventually pass up Full Metal Jacket because I've been watching it more. Fuck, dude. The Goonies, come on. All right, so that's my list. Thanks, Critical Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting question. So moving on to Movie Guy 666, also known as Zach. I literally was belly laughing at this question when I read it.
I was laughing at how it was worded.
Yeah, it's just, okay, my question is, you have to ... fornicate with one, marry one, kill one.
The choices marry, fuck, are kill, but Zach is being very classy.
Yeah, that's funny. Your choices are number one, Ida from Motel Hell, Evelyn from The Mountaintop Motel Massacre, and number three, Annie Wilkes from Misery. So you have to basically kind of, match one up here. Man, was I ever laughing with this. It actually took me a while. I didn't even know how to do this. So I went with, oh God, this is so bad. So I went with, for fornicate, I went with Annie Wilkes. I don't know my reasoning, but I did. For Mary, I chose Ida from Motel Hell because I think she's, I think she'd be very loyal. She seems like she's pretty loyal. And then for Kill, I went with Evelyn from Mountaintop Motel Massacre because, she probably needs to die, really. Yep.
That's kind of the same order I have, so...
I guess I'll go then. So mine is slightly different. I will marry Ida from Motel Hell because, why not? She's, seems very loyal, like Mid said. I will kill, Annie Wilkes, because goddamn that bitch is crazy. And then I do not know who Evelyn is because I haven't seen Mountaintop Motel Massacre.
You have no idea what you're sticking yourself
into. So that was my reasoning behind this is, you know, what's behind door number one. So that's the one I'm going with. Well, bad choice, opinion, possibly.
You picked the most hideous one to communicate with.
Yep.
Hey, so door funny. Number one always isn't good, okay? But that's just the chances you take when you pick door number one.
Awesome. So Mike Blood O'Flynn. I don't even know how to say the name.
Yeah, I have trouble with that. I just wrote down Mike.
But he asked a question, but then he actually found out the answer, so... but his question was about Night Warning, which is also known as Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker. And he was asking if it was ever going to get a DVD release. And I was like, well, you know, Code Red actually just put it out.
They just put it out?
Yeah, it actually just got released. It was supposed to come out years and years ago. I think the spy number on that fucking thing too is like number 6 or 8 or something, and it just came out this year, like a couple months back.
I looked it up on Amazon; it was like $44.
Yeah, that's crazy. So they released it, but I didn't really want to get too much into the whole Code Red thing. He wrote back and said that he just ordered it and stuff, but he's like, he was very confused about how it said that it's going to take 2 weeks to ship, and I was like, yep. Didn't want to respond to it, but if you're listening, buddy, yeah, Code Red is really, really tiresome with their shipping. Me and Jeremy know firsthand; they're fucking a mess.
Is it on Amazon?
It's probably a third party.
Okay, because I was wondering why it was, because it looked as if it was out of print. You know, like they released it back in 2008 or something. So
no, it's. Yeah, it was originally supposed to be released then, I think. But yeah. No, it just got released, and, you know, all Code Red stuff goes crazy. But, yeah, you can only buy new releases from the Code Red store because they don't even have barcodes and stuff. But, that's what they tell you. 2 weeks to ship? I mean, that's fucked up. I mean, how busy is this dude, man? But, I don't really want to get into the whole Code Red thing, but he did ask another question about – you know, DVD-Rs and bootlegs and stuff. And my thoughts on bootlegs is, you know, bootlegs can be okay, you know, as long as there's, you know, no, you know, actual release for it, unless it's like super gone out of print. Like there's some movies.
Even
like
if it's just out of print, I say, bootlegs are fine. If it's out of print, that's not your fault. Yeah. Go with bootlegs. Now the quality, they just range differently, right?
They really do. If you want to go to company, like certain bootleg companies and stuff will find, you know, better VHS transfers and others, but
and some are made it's from very DVDs, right?
Exactly. And it's very hit and miss. I couldn't really tell you which way to go and stuff because I haven't seen all of them, but it is, from what I have, I don't have too many bootlegs, actually, maybe only like 5 or 6, but most of the ones that I have are really good ones, so I guess I'm lucking out. But
I have really some bootlegs. Some of mine are okay, I wouldn't say a lot of them are great. I do have a lot of the Monster Vision episodes on bootleg, which is just, I love those things, but, you know, the quality is a little bit rough. But also, I wanted to quickly mention that you said, you know, this film was, Night Warning, but it also came out as Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was actually put out by Calm World Pictures in 1983, and it bounced around from companies, and then it did get acquired by Code Red in 2008, and it also was, I believe, owned by HBO Video at one time. So I think Code Red acquired it from HBO Video.
Interesting. I believe,
but that company also put out The Final Terror, by the way. They didn't make a lot of horror films back in the 80s, but they did make The Final Terror as well.
Very, very interesting. All right, so that is actually going to do it for the questions this week. You got more?
One more, I think.
One more, okay.
Yeah, Dylan, he asked if you were to get a tattoo based off a horror movie, excluding Moods, because he already has some, what tattoo would you get? So this is for me and you, Jeremy.
I think we all know the answer.
Chucky?
Yes, but I still haven't decided the cool Chucky or the shitty Chucky yet. I would have to think about it.
I thought you were going to say the kid from Gummo.
Yeah.
What?
You
what's
should
on your,
definitely get that one.
What's on your arm? Oh, it's just a Vampircon.
I'm definitely interested in getting a tattoo. I want
to get one too, but I haven't decided.
I do actually have a tattoo. It's not horror related. I got it when I was 13. But I haven't got gangster. One since. Yeah, I was pretty fucking awesome back then. I was pretty badass, you know, mean streets of PA and shit. So no, I'm joking. But anyway, I was thinking about getting Sam from Trick or Treat on my forearm. So that's where I'm at right now. But I almost want to just fill up my whole entire fucking arm with like everything that I love, like, and make it like a giant ass, like, montage of, my favorite
mood sleeve
or icons. Yeah. A sleeve.
Yep. I'm about halfway there. Alrighty. Cool. So I'm going to get into something I didn't do last week, which I actually intended to, completely forgot. I will openly admit that. But I was going to do another Rue Morgue's Coroner's Report fun fact of the day. I got lots of good feedback on this last year, so. But this one made me laugh. This is actually from an issue. This is the August 2014 issue. I actually can't find my new issue. I'm kind of pissy about that. But anyways, this made me laugh because this is probably the most random thing in the world. Anyways, a Brazilian man died last year due to internal bleeding after a cow escaped its enclosure and wandered from the hillside onto his roof, where it crashed through the ceiling and crushed him while he slept.
How the fuck did he get on the roof?
I'm assuming that maybe it was like the house was a little like under the earth a bit, and the roof maybe like touched the hillside or something. So, but that's fucking terrible way to die.
Isn't that an awful way to die? I was just laughing so hard when I was reading that. I was like, I have to do that
if
one.
You're a religious so type and you know you get up to like St. Peter's Gate or whatever, and like you're like, you know, standing in line and it's like, hey, how'd you get here, man? He's like, yeah, Vietnam or something, you know. It's like, this guy's like,
wow, he's still waiting.
This cow like fell on me from
fucking
like my roof
40 years ago. He's still waiting.
It's
to get
a
in.
Long line, dude.
I'd be fucking pissed off.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna complain? Because you know where you go if you complain.
It's like, my dick's been dry for 40 years. Come on. I've been standing here.
All right, guys. That is gonna do it for Mood Swings this week. Alrighty, so we're gonna get into the little mini reviews, and then we're gonna follow that up with some quick cuts. And yeah, so who wants to go first?
I'll go. The first film that I've seen that is not my pick of the week is All Cheerleaders Die from the year 2013. This was just released in 2014. It follows a group of cheerleaders and a friend who are out and about being, you know, cheerleaders in a high school that seems like that is, you know, a big part of it is the football team and the cheerleaders. The one of the head cheerleaders has a boyfriend who she assumes is cheating on him, confronts him, she insults him, he hits her. There's like a big thing going on, you know, altercation. The cheerleaders end up dying. Their crazy voodoo witch friend brings the cheerleaders back to life, and then they are out for revenge on the school football team and other people. They drink blood, and they're, you know, dead.
Essentially zombie vampires?
Something like that. Yeah, so this one to me, I know Moods might disagree, but to me it just felt like there wasn't much to chew on. It just felt like they had a idea that's been done a million times, and they you know, which is fine. It's fine to do the same thing over and over again, but you have to be entertaining with it, and I didn't find this one that entertaining. I thought it was okay. I liked some scenes. I thought that they overused the effects. I know you like them. I thought they were way overused, and it was just almost like, ha, look, we got these cool effects. Look what we can do with them. Look, check it out.
You thought they were overused?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Specifically the glowing rocks and stuff like that, and like, you know, coming through the body, like shining through. I thought that it was really overused.
I really liked it. It had that 80s type feel to it, you know, that real cheesy type effect to it. But I think that's kind of what they were going for. But I didn't think it was overused, though.
Yeah, I thought they kind of use it as like a crutch, like this is what's going, like look what we can do, like you know, we have we don't have much to say, but look at these. but no, I mean, I'm
much like the tits, kind of
hard on it. But to me, I thought that the cheerleaders were like overly, and I know it was probably trying to do this, but they were the cheeriest of all cheerleaders. You know, they were just really stereotypical cheerleaders on purpose. I understand but
big time.
I found it kind of annoying.
See, that's where I disagree, because the characters were purposely written like that to be way over the top, over cheery, just ridiculous, you know, beyond, you know, stereotypical characters. But like, I thought it was fun.
Yeah. See,
it was entertaining to me because it was just so ridiculous, but it wasn't annoying to me. I don't know why. I just found it was, I don't know.
If you took something like Mean Girls, like this mainstream like comedy, and put it in like a horror film, that's what it felt like to me. That it was trying to, like, the girls were just, it felt like it was just something like Mean Girls or like a film like that. I can't really think of many examples. I'm not really big into that genre, but I have seen that one, and that's kind of what it felt like to me. I don't know. I didn't really like the style they was going for.
My only question is with the film is, see, the girls weren't my problem. It was the football captain.
I like that dude.
Well, I mean, I don't understand.
No,
he was the most hateable character.
Yeah.
The most unlikable character ever. But the thing I didn't understand about his the guys on the team, they followed him like he was a god.
I didn't get it either.
It was like he had some kind of pull with them, and it just didn't make any sense. And I was like, he's just the captain of the football team. It's like he would look at the guys and he would just fucking bow down and start crying and shit.
Yeah, that really annoyed me, especially after he hit the girl, because anybody that I knew back when I was in high school would have fucking jumped on that dude in 2 seconds. And you know, boys are not, and like that really annoyed me. And when I say I liked him, I don't mean like I liked him as like, you know, like, oh, he was, you know, an awesome, fun loving character. I just mean like I liked the character. I liked the performance. It was good for the film. Same way I like the guy and the woman. He's a despicable, terrible person, but I like the performance, and it was a good character for the film. Doesn't mean I actually like the character. So yeah, there was that. I felt like the comedy, almost none of it worked for me. It really felt kind of basic in terms of what they used as funny moments and stuff. It felt very Jennifer's Body-ish almost to me, like, or at least influenced by it. But I actually think Jennifer's Body is a stronger film. So yeah, All Cheerleaders Die, wasn't that into it. I did enjoy it. It was a fun little ride, but it was nowhere near as good as I was hearing. Because this one, I heard like everybody say, like, oh man, I was expecting it to suck, but it was actually really good. So it was like I was expecting it to be really good, and it actually sucked. But not really. It didn't suck. It was just okay. 5.5 out of 10.
See, I was intrigued by the quirkiness and the weirdness of the film. Like,
really? Did you? I felt like they were trying to do that, but it didn't really work.
No, I meant like what they turned, like, you know, you got this witch that, you know, brings back these girls, and they're obviously, you know, they're brought back from the dead, so they're kind of zombie-ish, but they're not eating flesh, they're drinking blood, so they're like vampires. It was just really quirky, and it was odd. It was an odd film with an odd tone. Like, I don't really know how to explain it.
I really liked the beginning when they was doing the video documentary, like, high school yearbook thing, and then the one cheerleader falls. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And it never got to that height again. But, like, the quirky – like, I felt like Jennifer's Body is, like, a good example of, like, a weird, odd type of film. And I don't feel like this one ever got really going with that weirdness. Just different, I guess, different views.
Interesting. Jeremy?
Sure. All right. So the first film I rewatched actually this week, I watched it a few months ago and I really liked it. So I wanted to give it another watch because I want to either write a review on The Devil's Eyes on it or something. And that is a found footage film titled The Bay. Now, this film's been out for a while, and a lot of people talk about it, how it's one of the better found footage films, which I totally agree on. It's a really, really well done found footage film. The film basically follows this reporter as she reports this. It's like this special day that takes place in this town every year. And there's a huge disagreement with the remains of like chickens and stuff like that being dumped into the water of this community and the people drinking it and the government around them telling them that the water is safe, but it's actually not. So people start drinking the water and shit starts to go down. They start to get these diseases and, you know, they don't really turn into zombies. They just die, which is films that I like, you know, they just die and that's the end of it. So it's pretty much just this girl documenting how this happened and why this happened and how there were precautions telling, you know, the people of this town and the government that something was going on here. And we find out what is actually going on. I mean, that part was a little I really didn't really enjoy that aspect too much about what was going on. But the fact that it was really well done for a found footage film, I really liked it. I thought – I didn't even like realize I was watching a found footage film as I was watching it. It was that well done. I don't know. You know, some people like that and some people don't like that. But I think it needed to be done as a found footage film. It has some interesting messages about – government in it as well. So if you like to dig into films you know, deeper in, it's one to check out. Moods, do you want to say something?
It's good.
Yeah.
I really agree about the undertones too, but you know, the government stuff, and you know, you can definitely pull that stuff out of that film for sure, you know, the conspiracies and whatnot. But I really like the whole premise of the film, the bacteria, like, what do you want to call it? It's like a
bacteria organism or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. And I really like that idea of being in the water, and just everything about that movie was creepy as fuck, man.
Yeah.
I think it's just – it really did work. You know, you said it probably wouldn't work as – you know, or it would work better as a found footage. I think you could actually pull that film off as a non-found footage film.
Like Chernobyl Diaries type of – idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. When I first watched it, I was like, I was really, really surprised that I hadn't watched The Bay before. I remember telling the story before and was blown away by it. And then I got thinking, I was like, you could do that film non-found footage. And I'm not saying that they should. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think that it's one of those type of films I think you could pull off. But it's good overall. It's really, really good. Yeah.
I give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice. Check
it out. It's above average.
So we talked about this briefly before. Jeremy, I remember talking to Moods. I'm not sure if I asked you. So do you like found footage?
It matters how well it's done, to be completely honest. Yeah. If it's a really shitty found footage film like The Entity, I'm probably going to stay away from it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But if it's like, you know, The Bay or Grave Encounters, which is – Grave Encounters is fucking awesome – I usually would check it out if it has an interesting premise, but if it's like automatically known to be a shitty film, I won't watch it, but I don't mind it if it's done right.
Yeah, that's how we were at first, but I think both what you was going to say and what I wanted to say was we've come to a conclusion that we actually do like found footage.
Mm-hmm. I seem to be watching a lot of found footage films that I'm very intrigued by. I have to say...
And The Tunnel is fucking awesome too.
I just literally was going to say The Tunnel. That, in my opinion, is how it should be done. It's really, really well executed, and it has the perfect tone to it, and it's great. They don't go too far. It's none of that bullshit shaky cam shit where you just fucking can't see anything and you feel like puking after 10 minutes. Some of those found footage films are just too much. I mean, I shouldn't say that all of them are like that. I mean, Cloverfield has its moments where, fuck, the camera work is pretty intense, right? But overall, it's a pretty good film.
I've heard it argued both ways, though. I've heard it argued that when it isn't shaky, well, now it just looks like some cinematographer is, you know, filming it. And then I've heard...
But it depends on the type of film, though. With Cloverfield, they're literally running away from shit. They're hiding. Like, the shaky cam makes sense. right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're running away, you're not going to be holding that shit like you're fucking Stanley Kubrick, right?
Yeah. So people complain about that, though, right? It's too shaky.
Yeah. Yeah. With certain type films, I've seen where it's too shaky for what it is. And I think they're just kind of doing it purposely. It's like, fuck, it's not really adding anything to it except for just annoyance.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like I said, it depends on the type of film. So, but on that note, oddly enough, the first film that I'm going to review this week is from 2014, written and directed by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, you actually watched this?
Yes, and it's Willow Creek, and it is a found footage film, oddly enough.
I was just going to pick this up.
So fucking weird that we just got into that conversation about this. And
hold up, before you review it, this is going to determine whether I pick this up at Walmart, so.
Okay. It's got a very, very simple premise, you know, to it. It's about this boyfriend and girlfriend. Their names are Jim and Kelly. Jim has been obsessed with this story about this two guys. They were in like the mountains of California somewhere near this place called Willow Creek. And apparently they got footage of this Bigfoot back in like the 60s. And, you know, as a kid growing up, Jim always heard the legend about it and stuff. And it got the best of him. He really, really had to make his way out to Willow Creek. So as they go out there, they start interviewing people, some of the locals and whatnot, getting their stories and their opinions and their views on what about, you know, is there such thing as Bigfoot or Sasquatch or whatever. And, you know, the opinions are mixed. They even eat at this place called, it's like this Bigfoot cafe, and they're eating this burger that's actually shaped like a Bigfoot.
No, it's fucking not.
It fucking cracked. It literally had toes and everything. It was
like
funny as
Jason
hell.
Jason burgers from Port 9.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so funny. But anyway, so they're, you know, doing all that type of stuff, and they make their way down to this trail where it leads into Willow Creek and whatnot. And there's a dude there. And he's just like, basically, fuck off. You can't come in here. So they find another way in, and they start making their way down into the Willow Creek area and whatnot and stuff. And, you know, that's pretty much what the film is. Now my thoughts on this one, it's very, very basic. It's very basic. There's not really a lot to it. The story is kind of what you would expect from it. It's them interviewing people, just wanting to get footage, and they're just essentially looking for proof. You know, it's a really short watch. It runs about 80 minutes, so it's really short. You know, but I have to say, there's a scene in a tent that's actually pretty good. It runs a long time. Like, it's got to be 15 minutes. And, you know, it's at nighttime. They're in this tent. They're camping and whatnot. There's not really a whole lot to say about this. I don't really know. You can't really say anything further with it. I will say that I was definitely disappointed in the ending of this movie. It fell flat for me completely, but you know, the events leading up to the very end of the film were actually pretty well executed. I thought that the couple actually had nice chemistry together too. They felt like a real couple. And you know, some of the interviews were well done and stuff, but it's quite generic. And at times it even has this like total ripoff feeling of the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
And once you see the film, you'll understand why. And it's the first thing that comes to your mind. I wasn't trying to think that, but I couldn't help it. I was like, wow, that is so Blair Witch. You know, with a Bigfoot. But you know, it is what it is. It's not a terrible movie. It's just the payoff is not there. It was very frustrating because, like I said, there's a few moments that you're like, fuck, man, that is creepy as fuck. Because if you put yourself into their position, it would be freaky as fuck. I'm not lying. Like, where they set up camp is insane. And I'm just like, oh, man. But, you know, as a movie, I'm not there. You know, I'm watching this and I'm going, okay, here we go. And then it's a little flat.
Seems like that, you know, just a couple of different steps and it might have been a good one.
I think with just it's these type of movies, in my opinion, are all about the end.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the ending has to be the payoff is the movie, right? With these type of movies. And if it's not there, it's just, wow, it's just completely forgettable.
Because found footage films like this have big setups, long setups. So yeah. You are absolutely right. They need to then have a strong payoff for them to work. I'm right with you on that. It sucks. That sucks at this one, though. I will not be picking this one up, probably.
I really, really wanted to like this film.
Yeah, because I've been waiting for, like, a really good, like, new Bigfoot film.
See, now my only question is, why does there have to be so many Bigfoot films that are found footage? It seems, you know, I have, like...
It seems most natural to, like, you're trying to prove that it's real, so you're trying to get it. What does everybody say? Well, you gotta either have a body or catch it on camera. Exactly. So it makes sense.
It does make sense, but I want to see like a new Bigfoot film that isn't.
I want to see like if you take a film like Jaws or you know like the Reef or something serious like that and put like a good looking Bigfoot monster where these people are like stuck in like a car that's crashed or like a tree or something, like I think that could be really intense. They should somebody should make one of those.
And like I said, I must have six films that are made in the last 5 or 6 years that are found footage Bigfoot films that
are
kind of the same feel as this. I mean, they're obviously different and, you know, with a little bit of story and stuff. But, you know, essentially they come down to the exact same moment, which is like you can't tell me that these people have not seen any of these other fucking films. You're not trying to separate yourself from these.
Yeah, dude, there actually is a lot. Like I see them at Walmart all the time, oddly enough. Dude. Like, they all look the same, too.
Oh, it's actually quite crazy.
I thought Willow Creek actually did a good job of, like, kind of looking a little different because I didn't know it was, like, the cover when I picked it up in Walmart. It was, like, clear case, you know, nice red cover. I was thinking that maybe it was, like, something else.
And Dark Sky hasn't released a movie in a long fucking time. I noticed that, like, Dark Sky Films haven't really made or released any films in a while.
Is that who released it down in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Odd Mike grabbed that, too, and he didn't like it.
I have...
See, we don't have a slipcover.
Oh.
I have a slipcover on mine, and it's released by Anchor Bay.
Yeah, ours is released by Canada Dark Sky. Canada is
weird, dude.
It's just that whole rights thing. It just has to be... I don't know. But anyways, Willow Creek, man. I didn't hate the movie. I was entertained, and I have to say, like I said, there was about a 15-20-minute stretch there where I was like... Fucking, I was getting antsy, man. I was getting antsy, and it was working. But, you know, it falls short. And I'm going to give it just a pass at 5 out of 10. Mm. You know, it's probably worth to watch just for that moment.
It's not worth $10, though.
Watch it late at night. You know, I watch this at, like, 3:30 in the morning. Everything's light. All lights are out and stuff. But I don't know, man. It's not terrible. You know, I'll give Bobcat, you know, a little bit of credit. But at the same time, you got to be a little more original. And, 5 out of 10.
Cool. Jeremy, pick of the week.
Oh, all right. So my pick of the week is a film that just got a Blu-ray release. Probably know what it is. After I got it, I had to watch it to see how the PQ was, and that is Wes Craven's People Under the Stairs, which is a fantastic 90s. Yeah, I posted it in the group page how I was pissed off about the disc being the generic blue Universal.
I think
disc.
He was in Vegas during that.
I probably missed a lot of posts in there.
Yeah. I grabbed it because it was $10 and I had a gift card from Amazon, so I got it for like $4 and some change. So I figured I'd pick it up because I didn't want to get the Arrow release. The minute you put in the Blu-ray, it starts. It doesn't have a menu. It doesn't have anything. You just put it in, and it starts right away.
So fucking irritating.
I could look at that release and tell that it was going to be something like that.
And I hear Firestarter's the same way and all that. Mm-hmm. So I put it in. It's like, okay, I'm going to go do something, come back, and watch the movie. And it's like 10 minutes into it. All right, I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? We're in the year 2014. Put a menu in front of your movie. It's not very hard. That was one of the main complaints that I had, but.
Did you ever see those ones that do play when you first start and then you find out at the end that it does have a menu, but for some reason it bypasses that every time you put it in?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got ones like that.
Because it has no special feature, so it's like, what's the point of having a menu? But the PQ is actually pretty solid for a catalog release, I got to say. For a Universal release who usually doesn't do the best transfers for their low budget, you know, popular catalog titles. It's actually one of the better ones that I've seen. Mm. The color is pretty good. And considering the film is mostly dark, it's pretty watchable to be considering that it's a pretty low budget film, but everyone knows People on the Stairs.
love me some People Under the Stars.
The husband and wife in the film are just fucking amazing, and I would love to meet them and just have a picture of them two together, because I think it'd be just, you know, the coolest thing ever. I don't know if they do conventions or not. I'd be very curious to read up if they've done any conventions or not, but this is a really awesome Wes Craven film that doesn't get any any word on the street besides the horror community here. And I know Moods, you have the Arrow release, correct?
I do not have it, actually.
Oh, I thought you grabbed it. The Motel Hell one, and then
yeah, and then it got announced the next day after I ordered it. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, that the Arrow release has special features, but they're nothing special, and none of the DVDs in the U.S. have any special features for People Under the Stairs. So it's like even the 2003 DVD release of it doesn't have any special features. So
yeah, it's bare bones.
So it's not like you're missing much here, but
I would have loved Scream Factory to get a hold of it. Sucks.
Yeah, yeah, it does kind of suck.
At least a Craven commentary or something, you know?
Yeah. It's worth the upgrade, though. I didn't have a DVD copy of it. I just had a Laserdisc copy of it. So I needed to get it on a format that was more accessible than Laserdisc. So it was the way to go. It's a really, really good transfer for the film that it is. So pick it up. People in the Stairs always gets an 8.5 out of 10 for me. So
it's a great movie. It really is. I think that one of the cool things about People Under the Stairs is it has such a weird tone, because it's really serious subject matter, you know, child abuse. It's pretty brutal, you know, what the parents do to the kids. There's, you know, some overtones, undertones of
I know exactly what you're saying, though. It's like, it's quite a there is a lot of serious subject matter in there,
yeah, but it's also very comedic. But I feel like the two are never really crossing paths. They're kind of separate.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
totally. Love that movie. Great, it's great stuff.
Very good. Pick it up if you don't have it.
Yeah.
JP.
So my pick of the week this week is something new that I just watched. It is from the year 2013. It was released in 2014 by IFC Midnight, and it is Rays. Rays follows women as they awaken in sort of a prison, probably underground, and they pretty much have to fight to the death. There is some higher up people who have them captive, who also have their loved ones hostage. And if they do not fight, or if they lose, or whatever other reason, they will kill their loved one. So it is fights to the death. This one stars Zoe Bell, and it's pretty brutal. I really liked the first fight, because it really kind of set the tone for the film. It was done really well. The cinematography and the music all made it feel really brutal. It was kind of a bit sad, to be honest. Like, it kind of got to me a bit. It's kind of a simple film, and I feel like there are a few critiques to make. I feel like they did a little bit of poor character development with certain characters. I also feel like there was kind of the one, like, quiet blonde character who is friends with another character, and, like, someone, like, sacrifices themselves. I felt like that kind of was, like, hammered in a bit, and I also felt like the blonde character, nothing that we've seen from her would show that she was capable of making it that far in the tournament. That kind of bugged me a bit. And then I will say that it bugs me, because I'm such a huge MMA fan, that I just wish that, like, sometimes, I know it's film and you have to do it different because it's action, but I just wish that sometimes they would maybe look at like certain things in the world of combat sports and try to stay away from bad decisions in their choreography. But besides that, fantastic movie. I really enjoyed this one. The fight scenes are very brutal, and for you know what they did, I was not that pissed off of like, you know, this shouldn't work like this or whatever. So they did a pretty damn well job. And the ending I really liked also.
Man, Zoe Bell was fucking badass in that film.
I just picked it up, so I haven't got a chance to watch it yet.
Fucking ass. Man, I really, really enjoyed it. And what's the girl's name that's in the film? The other one that was in Death Proof?
I forget.
The one that sacrifices herself.
Oh, yeah. I don't know her name, but yeah, she was in Death Proof, the black girl.
Yeah, I was just really surprised to see her in the film. I thought that was actually really cool.
Was funny. I loved – there's one character who's supposed to be like the tough chick who doesn't care and is like enjoying it. She's enjoying having to kill each other. Her name's Phoebe.
Yeah.
The scene with her, like the main event scene, it was so awesome because it was like not what you was expecting so much. I really, really liked that scene. I would have just liked to see a little bit more character development so you really kind of know who's who. Because I got to be honest, I was getting confused with some of the girls a bit. Maybe made their features more defined so you could tell them apart a little bit easier. That's kind of my fault as the viewer to not be able to recognize them. But it partially partial blame is on the filmmakers to make it a bit easier also.
Yeah, I think they made that film almost too quick. You know?
Good point, because it almost feels like that, doesn't it? Feels like maybe the sets could have been a little bit better. Maybe it felt a little rushed in some of that stuff. That's a really good observation, because I probably thought of that subconsciously, but I never considered it to say during my review. So, yeah, great observation on that one. But I liked it a lot.
Yeah, me too, man. I was really, really thoroughly impressed with the ending. You know, I mean, I was kind of
expecting something like that, but not exactly like that. It seemed like the type of film that would maybe have an ending in that tone. Also, I would say that some people kind of might be offended by this film. I was just poking around looking at some reviews, and people seem to be really mad about, you know, women fighting in like this style. Like it's like it's wrong or something.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of combat sports, and women's MMA is actually, I like it more than the men's a lot of the time. So, I mean, I have absolutely no problem with a film like this.
What did you rate it again?
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Interesting. All right.
What would you give it?
I would probably give it exactly the same. That's why I said interesting.
Cool. Jeremy, check it out. It's cool.
Yeah, I just picked it up, so I shall check it out.
All right. So for my pick of the week is a brand new film, 2014. And this is the third part in this, I guess, trilogy now. Cabin Fever Patient Zero.
Pick
of the week.
What the fuck?
Well, the thing is, I've actually watched a lot of films over the last couple of days, but I don't know. I just went with this one because I just kind of wanted to talk about it, to be honest. But anyways, Cabin Fever, Patient Zero. Patient Zero is referring to Sean Austin's character. He's considered Patient Zero. He is locked away on the secluded island in the Caribbean, and he's there because he potentially has the cure for this flesh-eating virus that, you know.
Really? I thought Patient Zero was the first person to get contaminated. Isn't that what Patient Zero means?
No. Oh. Patient Zero in this case is Sean Austin. He's considered Patient Zero because he has been exposed to the virus, but he's showing no symptoms and stuff. So what they're doing in this facility, they're holding him against his will, and they're doing tests on him, and he's getting real fucking pissy and stuff like that. So then it jumps to like your main focus of the film. You've got basically this couple that's getting married down in the Caribbean, and they decide to rent this boat with their, you know, their friends and stuff like that to go out on a stag party. And so they get this boat chartered out to this island and whatnot. They go swimming in the water, and what they see is like nothing but dead fish and shit like that. And only two of the characters, and actually one of them's a girl, which is odd. It's a really close friend of the groom. And, and she's there with her boyfriend and whatnot. And the two go swimming Anyways, they come back on the shore and they start showing symptoms of something and whatnot. Anyways, it escalates and they basically need to get the fuck off this island now. And they find the facility and it just kind of goes from there and stuff like that. I thought it was fucking entertaining as hell. It's not a great film by any means, but it's gory as shit and it's nasty. It's pretty much what you'd
expect. Cabin Fever 2.
Maybe not as nasty as like that gross fucking.
Wait, Cabin Fever 2 was nastier than Cabin Fever 1?
Oh god, Cabin Fever 2 has gaggable it's parts nasty. In it.
I've never even gross. Seen it. So
there's one with pimples and this girl, it's gross.
But this one right here has got a couple really fucking nasty funny parts in it though. But yeah, the gore is really well done. Some of the, you know, people that are, you know, contaminated with this disease are really, really looking shitty, really fucking shitty. And there's this one hilarious part. I'm not going to say it, but it's with this like security guard and this gun. Fuck, it's funny. But overall though, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I really liked the end of the film. The end of the film is what sold it for me. I didn't see it coming for one thing. But you know, that's really was the selling point to this. And you know what you're going to get with a film like this, right? So there's not really a whole lot to offer, but it was entertaining and that's what it was all about. I wasn't expecting it to be good, but, like I said, it was, just entertainment value for me, man. You know, Sean Austin, I actually thought did a really fucking good job in this film for the short periods that he's in the film. He's in the beginning, a little bit in the middle and, you know, towards the end, obviously too, but, I think he does a good job.
Wait, Sean Astin?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Sean Astin. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool, but yeah, there's not really a whole lot to say about it. There's a lot of infected people and grossness going on and shit like that, but you know, there's, you know, like I said, the whole patient zero Sean Astin being held against his will there and stuff like that, so he's pretty fucking pissed off, just put it that way. You know, just for entertainment value and gore, you know, mad props for them not using any CG in this and shit like that. So, you know, I give it around about a 7 out of 10, you know, it was fun.
It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
It just surprised me because I didn't really know what to expect. Cause I kind of saw this whole bachelor party thing on this island and stuff. I was like, ah, whatever. But I don't know, man. The gore in the end sold me. I don't know. It was kind of, it was entertaining, but you know.
I totally wasn't even planning on picking this one up, but I might now.
I like the Cabin Fever films. I mean, part two is not a good film, but man.
We talked about this last week, so I'm not going to get into it, but.
Yeah. Holy fuck. But yeah. So we're going to get into a segment called Quick Cuts.
Quick cut.
Awesome. Do you want to go?
Sure. So the only other film I watched this week was a film that I probably am going to get shit to talk about, but is Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Now I watched this movie in my class, in my woman in horror class, and I posted on the page that I was upset that I was once again forced to watch Psycho in one of my classes because I've only watched it about 6 or 7 times in one of my classes. So Psycho, while it is very revolutionary for its time and it's a fantastic film, I find it extremely overrated. Well, maybe not extremely, but whoa. I find it overrated. And I'm probably going to get shit for this, but
Do you think it's due to the fact that you've seen it so many times and you're just being annoyed by it now?
Yeah, that would make more sense to me than being overrated.
I guess so.
I bet you that has something to do with it. Because, yeah. I mean, Psycho, it's so groundbreaking and I can't say it's, you know, it's just, it has just that.
And I agree. I got a little bit more out of it this time than I did the last time because we talked about the male gaze in horror films, which is, you know, the Hitchcock fused the, you know, you are looking at the girl as a male perspective instead of a female perspective throughout the entire film. So I found that interesting. If you guys are interested in the male gaze, look it up. It's an interesting feminist concept. But I agree that it's revolutionized for the of course, being the first slasher film ever made and all that, but
debatably.
debatably, you know, that between that and Black Christmas, but
and I'm Peeping just, Tom.
Or Peeping Tom is
One gets the credit. I've never seen it, so I can't comment on it, but if most people cite that one as the first.
They both came out in 1960, quite close to each other, so it's hard to say which one would actually be considered the first slasher film, but if you haven't seen Psycho and you're listening to this podcast, you're a fucking idiot. So,
whoa, way to insult people for maybe not seeing a film. Awesome.
Really? If you're listening to this podcast and you like horror films and you've never seen Psycho, then which you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. Arguably a horror film. Yes, but you shouldn't be listening to this podcast because it's probably one of the most famous horror films ever made, and a lot of people talk about it. So it's kind of, you know, kind of a golden rule that if you are into horror films, you have seen Psycho, like how you have seen Halloween and Dracula and Frankenstein and everything like that. It's kind of a golden rule that you've never seen Dracula or Frankenstein.
Nope.
Wow.
That blows my mind.
Is your mind blown like mine is right now?
It's I'm not at a loss. That crazy.
How have you never seen Dracula or Frankenstein?
I'm surprised you've never seen either one of those films on TV before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen them. So, wow, that's
interesting.
I'm sure there are tons of films, Jeremy, that you've never seen that are very popular and should be seen by every horror fan.
I haven't seen Sisters, so that's one that, you know.
You just seen the Phantasm films like last year, correct?
Yeah, correct.
So, see, everybody has those, except for Moons, because you've seen everything.
But it's not a classic everything. Like not Psycho everything. Is.
I can't even talk to you right now. I love Phantasm, man. Phantasm is too a classic. Like,
all right, this is not really a quick cut, but everyone should see Psycho, but I'm sick of watching it, but it's still a classic.
Rating?
8.5 out of 10.
What?
Jeremy. JP.
Oh, my God. I can't even. Psycho will not be in our Hall of Fame, guys. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks a lot. Anyway, mine is also a quick cut. Case 39 from the year 2009. I thought it was an okay, pretty good bad kid movie, killer kid movie. Not the best, kind of predictable. Some kills could have been a little bit better. There was like some CGI and stuff that I didn't really enjoy. I thought that it built some tension, okay, but overall, I'm not a huge fan of bad kid, killer kid movies. 6.5 out of 10.
Wait, hold the fuck up. You're not a fan of killer kids movies? Never mind. You like when kids die in films. my bad.
Way to go for making me sound like the absolute most craziest person in the world.
I mixed the two up. That was my mistake.
I like some killer kid movies. Some are better than the others. Children of Corn is like one of my favorites. But the concept of it, I don't know.
Isn't Eden Lake a killer kid movie?
Yeah, that one's done really well. I love that one. Like I said, some are good, some are bad, some are great.
That movie's fucking awesome.
Eden Lake was, I believe that was one of my picks of the pick of the week a while back. So
that's why I brought
Eden Lake is fantastic. Case 39, just okay. It's above average. 6.5 out of 10.
Hmm. All right, quick cuts. JP already covered All Cheerleaders Die. I watched on Thursday. I give it a 7 out of 10. I know he's gonna be like, what?
No, I could see it.
I really did enjoy it. It was fun, and that's what I was looking for. Next up, I watched, the original Prom Night from 1980. This is the brand new Blu-ray Synapse release.
Did it live up to your expectations?
The Blu-ray was fantastic looking. I have to say, man, it wasn't dark at all. I don't even know how the fuck they managed to pull that off.
Didn't you say Cool Dude was saying it was?
Yeah, actually, he did say that, but I
he
watched
probably
it.
Didn't
I was
watch
like,
it.
Nope. Just got it for free and was holding it up.
Yeah. But no, I was thoroughly impressed with the PQ on this. And really, I mean, I wasn't going to expect anything less from Synapse. The special features on are fantastic, too. But, you know, it did make the movie a little more enjoyable for me watching a really nice print. Still, it's not one of my favorite films. I really, you know, it's average at best. I give it a 6 out of 10 out of 10. The Blu-ray itself, I give like a 9.5.
Six out of 10 out of 10? That's what you
six
said.
And a, 6.5 out of 10.
You said six out of 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That was funny. Okay.
Whatever. But like the Blu-ray itself, though, it's like easily a 9.5. It's awesome. It's really, really well done. Next up, I reviewed a film on body bags called Tomboys from 2009. It's a rape revenge film. Pretty interesting type of structured film. It's got lots of twists and turns early in the film and stuff. I'm not really 100% sure how I feel about the end. I give it a 6.5 out of 10. Check out the full review. From 1988, I watched Flesh Eater. Speaking of enjoying killing kids, there's this funny-ass fucking part in Flesh Eater. Fantastic. It's pretty much like a Night of the Living Dead ripoff, of course, directed by Bill Hinesman, who was the original zombie in Night of the Living Dead, so it makes a lot of sense. Fun-ass film, 7 out of 10.
Put out by my favorite company.
Shriek Show. Actually, the print's okay. But this film right here just blew me the fuck away. I could not believe it. I was watching Shelf by Shelves by Danny, and he said this film was really good. And I was like, fuck, I actually have that in the collection. I just picked it up, oddly enough. And it's a film called from 2004 called Frankenfish. Stupidest fucking title ever. Man, dude, I laughed so hard. It just looks so stupid. But, man, this movie was a lot fucking better than I ever anticipated it to be. Yeah, man. Pretty much all practical effects. I mean, there's a little bit with the...
I passed on this one so much.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes where the fish... But even the CG looks pretty damn good. But, man, some really good kills. And like I said, you know, practical effects and whatnot. It was fun. The setting was in a really awesome place, like in the bayou and stuff. And it was really fucking good, man. I really enjoyed it. But the whole premise comes out in the end, and it just makes you laugh. It's so ridiculous. I actually give it a 7.5 out of 10. It was really entertaining. Next up is a film called Death Do Us Part, which I watched last night. It's a brand new slasher film from 2014.
Is that the wedding one we were laughing about?
I believe so, yeah.
It has the knife on the cover?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have that.
Oh my god, man. I called the killer 20 minutes into the film and then called every single scene throughout the film and even called the last scene. I was predicting everything in this film. I just couldn't fucking believe how like generic it was. It was unbelievable. 3 out of 10. I give it 3 for some of the chicks that are in it were pretty good looking, but man, it is not a good watch. The kills were really fucking boring. Like there was nothing to the kills, but just so predictable. Predictable. Not a fun watch. Finished up, watching Leviathan today, the Scream Factory Blu-ray. Wow. PQ, awesome. And it just really reminded me how much I love this movie. It's so fucking, it's such a good film. It's such a good film. And the special effects, the creatures look amazing in this film. They're really good on Blu-ray. But yeah, it's just a fun fucking movie. Underwater type creature feature. I give it 9 out of 10.
Ooh,
it's an amazing film. Damn. Definitely check out Leviathan. It's awesome. Next up, I watched Pumpkinhead, the Scream Factory Blu-ray. Had to check out the PQ on it. And the PQ is beautiful. The sound is great. I'm not going to get into Pumpkinhead. Everybody knows about Pumpkinhead. But I give it 9.5 out of 10.
Wow.
It's a great film. Next up, I watched a film from, I believe it was Korea, South Korea. It's called The Butcher. It's like it's your run of the mill type torture. It's, you know, a bunch of people making a snuff film. So they literally have people tied up and they're torturing them and doing stupid things. Dialogue, absolutely horrible. Shot brutally. Fucking terrible motherfucking movie. It was fucking awful. I was being tortured watching this fucking thing. It was horrible. 2 out of 10.
And you sound like me now.
Oh God, it was bad. 2 out of 10. I don't even know why I'm giving it a 2. I can't even justify that. Fuck. Next up, I watched a film called Stag Night. This is a film from 2011. It is released by Ghost House Underground. The company could be very hit miss, as you guys know. This is one of the better titles, basically about a group of people on a stag who get let off this train in the New York subway system, and there's cannibals around, and now they're fighting for their lives and shit. Pretty fucking entertaining. Some pretty good gore. Kind of blew me away, really, because I wasn't expecting anything from this film. It was fun. 7 out of 10. And last up, I watched Superstition, and this is one of the films I had mentioned to Jeremy that I finally knocked off my fucking, you know, my most wanted list. Original Anchor Bay film from 1982. It's like it's a witch film. The story is about this witch that gets burned. Anyways, present day, she's back. killing off people one by one in this cabin and whatnot. Really cool kills. Really fun film. 8 out of 10. If you can find this, fucking pick it up. It's very, very expensive, though. And that is going to do it for my quick cuts.
I just wanted to let you know, Moots, The Butcher has a 4-star rating on Amazon with 28 reviews.
What?
4 out of 5 stars, 28 reviews.
Wow, that may be fucking – those. Wow, fucking retarded. That makes no sense.
But movies like what? Inside has 3.5 stars. Like, blows my mind.
Yeah. The Butcher was fucking terrible. It was awful. Yeah, so that's going to do it for quick cuts. And we are now into the two main reviews this week. So if you haven't read the header on this video, you know that we're going to be reviewing The Toolbox Murders from 1978 and the remake Toolbox Murders, directed by Tobe Hooper, which came out in 2004.
Which is also the second Tobe Hooper film that we're covering in our featured review. So we did that twice, this back-to-back with Ty West and now Tobe Hooper. Not unplanned, wow. Too. It just happened that way.
That is totally unplanned. That's actually very interesting. Yes. So who wants to do the honors of the plot of The Toolbox Murders? JP.
Yep. So it's your job.
I was actually going to be like they're going to pick somebody else for once, but no.
Well, just face it. There's not really a whole lot to tell here.
Nope. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how much to even say without getting like spoiler-y. So the film opens up with a couple of murders of women by a masked man carrying around a toolbox, hence the toolbox murders. He eventually kidnaps a young girl. I believe she is 15.
It looks like she's 23. It's hilarious.
And the brother of that girl is trying to track down the killer because the cops are useless. And he befriends another person, and they try to track down his sister. That's the plot.
Yep, that's pretty much the plot of the film. Sounds awesome.
Dude, I was watching this movie, like, no joke. I was, like, sitting there. I was going, that dude looks like fucking
William Shatner?
No, like Greg from the Brady Bunch. I was like, I could not get out of my mind that guy. I even had to go on IMDb. I was like, is that Barry Williams? And it wasn't, but he looks just like freaking Greg Brady. It's hilarious.
I thought you were going to say that Cameron Mitchell looks like William Shatner. I've always thought that Cameron Mitchell looked like William Shatner. Something about him, man. It's really funny. Yeah, I got to say, man, I really like the way this film opens up. Opening
it's
credits.
It's interesting.
Yeah, the way it's done and stuff, and you know, pretty interesting score to it and stuff. But it's interesting how it's done, you know. But
how so, you mean?
Just with like kind of the way it pauses and stuff.
Yeah, I found that interesting. I thought my video was fucked up and was like, oh no, it's part of the movie.
I kind of figured that people might actually think that, but every time I watch it, I think I'm like, holy shit, is that freezing?
Yeah.
It kind of catches you off guard, but I think that's like kind of interesting how it's done. And I mean, it's not like the best thing in the world, but I think it's interesting. It's not very common that it's done like that, but
yeah, I think that when this film started, I was really kind of almost uncomfortable because the kills are done in succession with not much breather in between, which normally there's kill, break, kill, break, like that. When you take those breaks out, it kind of makes you a little uneasy because there's no breathing room, no cushion. So I love that choice right away. I was very aware of it. It's not, you know, rocket science to figure out that it has that effect on you when you don't have that breather, that break, that, you know, tension relief. And it's done in a very like voyeuristic type of way, like most kind of like slasher films like this. But it has like a level of depravity too, which
voyeuristic. Look at you using big words. That was in my
not
textbook this week.
Big word at all. And I felt like, you know, the level of like depravedness that was to it. I felt like there was a level of that, and it really kind of made me feel uncomfortable. So right away, I was like really in this one.
So are you talking like right up to about the 30-minute mark there?
Yeah, probably about that.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, I know the first 30 minutes of this film are like, holy shit, just like bang, 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 bang. And it makes for a real interesting structure to the film because, the first 30 minutes are fucking insane. Really, really, really inventive kills, accompanied by amazing soundtrack that I know Jeremy wanted to.
Sounds like a 70s porno.
Yeah, not even that. It sounded like a 70s porno, but the kills are so phallic. It's not even, it's so obvious. Like, he uses, in the first kill, he uses a drill. And this girl goes into a bathroom and locks herself in this bathroom. And he drills the drill through the door, and it looks like a dick going through a glory hole. And it's just so blatantly obvious that it's a phallic symbol, and this guy's obviously sexually deprived. And then when he kills her, her blood splats up on this naked woman.
I know.
This painting of this naked woman. And it's like him finishing on this naked woman. Like, the blood represents, you know, a giant load all over this naked woman, and it pops up a few more times as the kills go on.
That is quite, it might even be shaped like a penis too.
Yeah, and even like
blood splatter,
and even on like later on when they find a dildo under the girl's bed, they're like, they're like disgusted by it. But just
there's a lot of sexual.
There's nonstop things though. I mean, like, the blood on the naked woman, obviously, but like the nail gun itself.
Yeah.
You know, the nails themselves, like the hammer, the drill, everything about it. It's just, it's ridiculous. There's so many phallic symbols in this fucking film. It's ridiculous. But yeah.
It's more blatant than Slumber Party Massacre, which is like the most blatant a slasher could get.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But yeah, getting back to those kills in the first 30 minutes, man, shit. Very inventive, but the soundtracks that are playing for each kill is just like, it's so perfect.
Yeah, I
love
it.
It's just so perfect. But, and the thing I love about these kills too is how fucking sleazy they are.
It is very sleazy, especially the leading up to the kill and the stalk. And, you know, obviously the kill itself. But I noticed that also, man. I was like, there's just like a sleaziness to this film, especially because it's the three in a row, right? The three kills in succession that makes you feel like, okay, am I just watching like a sleazy, like, murder fucking, you know, like, series here? Like, I didn't really understand what I was watching. This is the first time I ever seen it. So it was like very sleazy to me feeling.
Oh man. Like the one scene where he looks down on that one room and the girl's just like dancing and dancing in the window and shit. I'm just like, fuck, you can't get any sleazier than that.
That's like the clear definition of voyeurism, man.
I like that you were just, you know, mimicking the dance. It's too bad you guys listening can't see that, because that was good.
But it just adds to that whole first 30 minutes, though. It doesn't – that shot most definitely doesn't need to be there, but it's there. And it just adds to that sleaze. But like I said, the soundtrack is so – it's almost creepy. Like the first murder, I believe, it's almost like
it's a country song.
It's like a country lounge type music, yeah, but it's just fucking creepy. Mm-hmm. It's creepy too, man. You're like, holy fuck, man.
And like, I love how he walks into the room and he turns it up even louder. So it's like, it's just like, you know, that much more as a character, you know, the soundtrack.
I also noticed that, like, the way that the kills go down and the way that he kind of shows up is kind of different than what you normally see in like a slasher. Like the one he you know, punches the girl and then like carries her out in the like hallway. Like, you don't really see stuff like that in these type of films usually. So I was kind of interested in that. It added a little bit more of a rawness and realness to what I would think maybe like a random ass psycho dude would be doing.
Yeah, he's kind of putting on a touch of, you know, essentially what, you know, what the film comes down to. You know, I think that. I don't really want to give anything away, but I think those elements of being even more nastier than you probably should have been, you know, is it kind of adds to what the character, like what you find out in the end of the film.
It a little bit more interesting that the killer didn't have a deranged mother. It was actually the girl that he kidnapped was the one whose mother was deranged or a little bit crazy. So I found that interesting. I still haven't, you know, really thought about it, like what it meant, but I just found it interesting that we usually think that the killer has mommy problems, but it's actually the girl in this film that has mommy problems.
I agree with that. I think it's such an interesting premise that, you know, I don't know if we really want to get into that, but like the reason why he's doing all these killings and stuff.
Yeah.
It is actually quite different. yeah, I don't know, man. I think there's so many elements in that first 30 minutes that are just fucking so badass, man. Mm-hmm. Like the way these girls are, they go down, the girl, the one girl that he's shooting around the room with the nail gun and shit. Yeah. It's just, it's vicious.
Yeah. It's so very vicious. The first kill too, when he just jabs her with the drill, I was like, oh shit. Like, what am I watching? Like, cause I never knew this film was like this. Like, I thought it was just like another like standard. I didn't know it was like this sleazy or anything. Like, so I was really surprised coming to this one. I've never really heard anybody talk about this one. I was really surprised by this one.
I want to say this movie is actually still banned in the UK.
Yeah.
I don't think they have an uncut version ever released of the Toolbox Murders. This was one of the original 39. And it's basically because of that first 30 minutes.
Yeah. Great.
You know, essentially first 30 the film. Minutes. Yeah, the first 30 minutes.
It's just funny because we keep going back to it.
Yeah. But it's just filled with, it has everything you want though. You know, that stalk and kill and sleaziness and tits and muff and great fucking creepy music. It makes you feel uncomfortable. Everything about the first 30 minutes is fantastic. And then you get into the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
This movie is in basically, to me, it's like, it's almost in thirds.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's like three different fucking movies. The first 30 minutes is just batshit crazy. The next 45 minutes is a lot of investigative stuff. And then you got the boys and they're going around cleaning
between
up
Greg
shit.
Grady and his and
yeah. You know, you got a lot of that going on. And then you got, you know, the detective talking to Greg Brady and shit like that. Like there's to me, it's way too long. Like 45 minutes of this, I think some of those scenes definitely could have been cut down or but in my opinion, those 45 minutes, they're tolerable though.
Yeah.
That's the odd thing about that 45 minutes is that, you know, I think for the first 15, 20 minutes with the investigative stuff, you're kind of going, okay, but really nothing happens in that 45 minutes, but it's still passable. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I do want to say like my big negative real quick. And this one really kind of hurt the film for me. I mean, the fact that the first 30 minutes is the peak, that's a problem, but the thing I had was actually with a character, and I've never liked when the crazy character, the psycho, can turn it on and off, because the way they act when they're being crazy is completely different than the way they act when they're not being crazy, which I, you know, Norman Bates doesn't turn it on and off. Hannibal Lecter doesn't turn it on and off. I like
Michael Myers doesn't. I see what you're getting at though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I always hate when it's like they're two different characters almost. There's the normal one, and then when he's being crazy, and it's like it doesn't work like that. Like Norman Bates always has this level of crazy to him anytime he talks. And this guy is, it's almost like silly, you know? It's like over the top.
I thought they revealed the killer a little bit too early in the film.
I actually like that they did that because I was expecting a whodunit and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about right at the midway point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like not even that far.
And I like how they did it with the, you know, showing the toolbox and stuff. I like that reveal. Something different.
I thought it was just going to be a guy that had the same toolbox.
that's what I thought initially too, because I was like, they're not going to reveal the killer already, are they? But they did, and I was like, all right, it's something different. They always, you know, most times that's not the case, so I accepted it.
But, you know, I think revealing the killer in the middle of the film, you know, kind of sets up, you know, the last, I guess, 15, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation between the killer and the and the kidnapped girl is fucking out to lunch, man.
And he's like, oh, daddy, talk to me. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
The questions are kind of crazy, but the answers that she's giving him are fucking nuts. Like, did you guys listen to those answers, man?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was crazy. Like, the conversation was so intriguing, and it kind of brought me back into the film, you know, after this 45 minutes of basically really not a whole lot happening. You know, when it gets into this, and he's talking to her, and she's answering, and he's asking her about death, and she's giving these weird fucking answers, and man, dude, I thought it was a really, really entertaining and just odd.
Yeah, like, but she was in control, right? Like she was playing him. Like she totally. She was manipulating his emotions.
Sexual desires.
Yeah, completely. But her answers were awesome.
Yeah,
I liked the script. It was good.
It definitely. I remember specifically like like hanging on each statement and looking for what she was going to say next. Like I do remember that being a really interesting part of the film. Overall, like I feel like if the film kept at the same pace that it started at, man, this would have been like one of the best. But unfortunately, I do think that the after that 30-minute mark, it does decline a bit. I still really did enjoy this one, though. I was really surprised by it because I had seen the remake first, so I was expecting more along the lines of that film, which the you know we'll get to it later. But these films are completely different, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pretty surprised, man.
Yeah, it's a very odd film for its time too. I mean, there's nothing like it. You know, 78 and having a structured film like this, it goes batshit crazy, basically into like a cop drama, you know. And then in the third part of the film, it just it's like a psychological thriller type thing. You know, it's like it's just such an oddball fucking movie, but. And I do have a little bit of issues with the ending. I don't really want to say too much about it, but I think it's a little abrupt.
I like the abruptness, though. I think it was kind of fitting.
I think the scene where you know they you know I can't really say anything.
Yeah, that sucks. Kind of,
I thought that was like kind of a final epilogue, I guess. And I thought that was like worded weird and stuff. I was like, this. It's not even that.
Failed. It was like. It was leading up to that and like just how they didn't show something. You know what I'm saying? Like I had problems with that like big time. I just thought that didn't really fit for the tone of the film. I think it should have been – I think it should have just instantly went back to that first 30 minutes and just been fucking nasty and like, kind of get that and bring you right back into what you just – you know what the whole thing was about and stuff and well, and then kind of leave you with that epilogue and then it would have been like, okay.
Yeah, I liked how that – I liked that shot. Though like the final like part of the film like the very end like I liked the shot of you know right before the epilogue and stuff. I thought it was pretty cool, but you know another thing that I forgot to mention was you know the one character who I felt like played crazy bad, there's actually a second character that plays crazy even worse because it's even way more over the top when they become crazy.
I know.
So yeah, I mean it's that like really bugged me.
Yeah, he just turns on a dime, though.
Yeah, which is...
You know, Buddy figures out something, and then Buddy turns on a dime, and it's like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that does... I know what you're saying. That totally doesn't seem legit at all.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with, like, mental things like that, like psyche, I expect it to be done in a serious matter, a realistic way, because if not, it just comes off like villainy, like twirling mustachey, like I don't know. I think it has to be very specifically done. That you know that's why you credit Norman Bates is one of the best, right? I mean, the crazy that he plays, it's an undertone of crazy. It's always with him throughout. Same thing with Hannibal Lecter. Same thing with Billy Loomis, for God's sake, from Scream. Mm-hmm. Like any guy who's like crazy is crazy throughout and doesn't turn it on and off. Any good crazy villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we can't really talk about like the actual, you know, explanation for why these murders were happening and stuff, because I think a lot of people might actually miss the point of why the killer was killing those specific women and stuff. Like there is a point to it. Like I think some people do miss it.
I might have missed it.
They might have been looking more towards why he kidnapped the girl. You know. Which is kind of it's kind of an easy one to figure out why he kidnapped the girl.
Yeah. We'll talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, there is an explanation there, and it's actually quite a good conversation. I've thought a lot about this since I've watched it, and there is a lot more to the end of this film than people probably give it credit for. But yeah, we'll talk about that after. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody that hasn't seen the film. So, I think the end of the film does have a little bit of issues, but there is a lot more kind of, I don't want to use the word subliminally because it's not subliminal at all. I think it's there in the material, but yeah, it, you know, it kind of saves it for me a little bit. You know, the more I think about it, the more I really do like the film. I just wish there was a little more substance in the middle of the film, a little more of what we saw in the first 30 minutes. You know, I just, you know, I think if you execute something, you know, if you peak in the first 30 minutes of a film, chances are you're not going to be able to recover.
Yeah.
So, but you know, with that said, in my opinion, I don't find this film to be that bad at all. I think the performances are great. In my opinion, I think Cameron Mitchell does a good job.
And you have to give it credit that you can't say that it came out during a time where slashers were oversaturated, because it came out in 1978, yeah, the same year as Halloween did. So it's pretty
– slashers weren't even a thing yet.
Yeah, like, so well, that's the thing. You can't say it's a generic slasher, because it came out way before all the other generic slashers came out.
So. I mean, fuck, man. We can't say generic at all. I mean, the structure of this film is so different than
barely
any other films ever do this, even nowadays. Like, yeah, you know, go so quick into it and then slow down and then do this. And then it's a really unique film in that aspect. So, but yeah. So I don't know what else to say about the film.
Ratings?
What do you give this one?
I give this one a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice.
I give it a 7 out of 10. It's definitely one I want to explore more. I've been talking about it. I think there's a lot of interesting things to say about it.
Yeah, I also give it a 7.5 out of 10, too. Like I said, the middle part of the film does, you know, it doesn't completely ruin anything for me. It's just, I think it could have been just chopped down a little bit. You guys know what I mean.
So that gives us a combined rating of 7.3.
7.3. How the hell does that happen?
7.5, 7.5, 7 divided by 3.
Yeah. Okay. So that is the Toolbox Murders from 78. And then we move along to the Toby Hooper remake in 2004.
Toby, what are you doing, Toby? What are you doing?
Again, this basic, do you want to do the what's going on in this one?
You do it.
Actually, the premise is the exact same. Basically, you know, we got a bunch of people getting picked off in a I guess it, by now it's like a real famous, real history filled type
historic landmark hotel, historic or something.
Hotel, yeah,
apartment and, building complex. So,
but this time around, you have a couple that moves in, and she's getting pretty curious about certain things that are happening in the building and whatnot while these people are getting picked off. And, you know, essentially that's what it is. There's not really a whole lot to the plot of the film.
The only thing different is it is a bit more supernatural.
Yeah. We'll get to, you know, the whole end of the thing. The interesting thing about this movie, I don't know if a lot of people notice, but the opening scene is Sherry Moon.
Yep.
She's the first victim in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I didn't even notice that. That's fucking crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
I, like, noticed that, like, right away.
I didn't notice. Now that you mention it, I noticed, of course, but at the time, no.
I actually hadn't seen this movie since 2004. I bought this movie when it first came out, and I literally haven't watched it in 10 years, and I fucking didn't even realize back then.
Wow, 10 years. I wonder if there's going to be a 10-year anniversary DVD special edition coming out.
So as soon as the movie starts, I go, holy shit, I know that voice. And I look, and I'm like, fucking Sherry Moon, crazy. Yeah,
it's so obvious with the voice, too. Now, like, I'm just picturing it now. That's fucking crazy.
And once again, in my opinion, I think the best kill of the entire film is pretty much hers.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It kind of peaks right there. The interesting thing about this
the first 5 minutes.
Like there's no backstory in this at all. In the beginning of the film, it just kind of gets into this film, which was kind of disappointing.
The first one was billed as like a true story. I didn't really look into the history of it, but I think it actually does have some ground on that true story, telling the story. I think something like that really did happen. I'm not sure. This one
it could be just based on events or something. Who knows? But yeah, this one doesn't start with anything. It's just people in this place, and that's kind of an off-putting thing right there, because you know you learn things towards the end of the film, but it's like, okay, this movie has major fucking plot holes.
Yep.
Major plot holes. I mean, not showing anything at the beginning just proves that. This one is really not going a whole lot of places.
No. I was so disappointed. It wasn't even funny. After, like, I watched them like back to back. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know.
I will start with some of my pros to this film. I really did like the dark approach that Tobe Cooper took to this film. He didn't make it sleazy, which I mean, obviously I love the sleaziness in Toolbox Murders, but this one is not sleazy really at all. The movie is not only dark in approach and like kind of tone, but it's actually dark and like visually.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. That was actually one of the main things that I liked was the darkness of it. It wasn't just, you know, lighting wise dark, had like a musty, damp, old building feel. And yeah, it, that was captured really well. That would, you know, Mr. Hooper correctly did that. So
I really honestly loved the setting, like you just touched on that. The building looked awesome. It actually felt kind of like old and authentic.
Yeah, really historic. Like it felt like it would be a historic, like landmark type thing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with the low lighting though too. I think it just kind of creates this kind of natural atmosphere when you dim the lights. It just feels right. You know what I'm saying? Like you just kind of feel like it should be like that. I don't really know what else to say about the positives in this film.
I will say that I don't have a whole lot of positives. I have some negatives if you'd like to hear those.
Go ahead.
One is I felt like everything was just a bit too. For example, the owner was a bit too slackery. The creepy weird guy with the hair in front of his face was a bit too creepy weird guy with the hair in front of his face.
Well, yeah, he's just too fucking obvious. I mean, seriously, yeah. Who looks like, I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
It really was so accentuated and like, come on.
And what kind of fucking name is Coffin Baby?
Well, okay. So, what was the caretaker's name again? It was Ned, right?
Yeah.
His name is actually, so it was Ned, just like the first one. Okay. Yeah, man. The first time you see him in the film, you're like, seriously? That guy's in there? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand where this is going.
Yeah. Everything just felt like a little bit like too far. Like, come on, you took it too far. I'm so glad that Toby didn't write this because, like, that's where most of the problems come from. It's just like amateurish. It really is. Mm-hmm.
This film offers you absolutely nothing. You know, I mean, if you've seen the original film, you're like going, okay, these people are getting killed. These people are getting killed and stuff. And you're kind of thinking it's going one way. And then by the end of the film, it's like, you know, after I can't even remember her name. What's your character's name in the film?
Nell.
Yeah. Who is played by
Angela Bettis.
I love her, man. She's great. You know, when she starts this investigative thing with the, you know, the symbols and what they figure out, I actually kind of liked what they figured out. I think that whole premise of, you know, having this whole kind of structure in between a building and whatnot was actually kind of a cool idea. I don't know. I kind of like that. But then what you find in there and, you know, the payoff and, you know, of what's going on, it's like, what? It doesn't fucking make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. Mm-hmm. Is there anything there? Like, I mean, her investigation stuff I thought was kind of fun and like what she figured out and stuff, but it's like,
it's usually the part I like of the film. And
yeah, but then, and then after, you know, she makes her way into there and then we figure out who the killer is that's named Coffin Baby.
God.
And then the explanation behind Coffin Baby, what?
This one to me just never really got going, man, in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's honestly not like the worst thing I've ever seen. It's definitely watchable.
It's not Leprechaun 4. That's for
this
sure.
This is where you need to have some type of, you know, opening scene, or you need to give you something in the beginning of the film. You can't fucking throw all this shit at us at the end of the film and expect the viewer to be like, mm-hmm, oh yeah, that makes sense. There's nothing fucking there.
And how about the symbols that they like blatantly, like, just, you know, look at these symbols. Like, I, oh man, it's It's something else. I think there was an okay film in here though. If you would have, the script needed really rewritten a few times, polished way more. You know, toned down the characters a bit.
There needed to be backstory somewhere.
Backstory, totally. That could have definitely came in with another rewrite. Just feels like they, you know, went with their first fucking script almost, right?
it's so poorly written. How did Tobe Hooper take the script and go, yeah, I'm fucking doing that one?
Yeah, this had to be like one of those director for hired job
did
things.
I have a feeling that Tobe Hooper took the script and said, fuck, I need a paycheck. And he took the script and he didn't write it. And then he started shooting things in sequence.
Yeah.
And then he got to the end and he was like, holy fuck, this is the end?
It's like, we didn't set this up.
We didn't fucking set anything up.
We'll get it in post.
And then Tobe Hooper literally went, who the fuck is Coffin Baby? You know he screamed that out.
Dude.
I just said it back in the world. I go, what kind of name is fucking Coffin Baby?
Who wrote this thing?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Jace Anderson and Adam Glersh something.
I mean, the film isn't all bad. Like I said, the setting's cool. The atmosphere is actually pretty good. Really good performance by Angela Bettis. I think she does a good job. But otherwise, I mean, seriously, I mean, of course you're going to have like the most eccentric characters in there. Her neighbor, the one that's playing the guitar, like,
yeah,
really, it's just cliche too.
Every single one of the characters, they really tried to make everybody these like weirdos. Like
they're in Los Angeles. Everyone's trying to make it in Hollywood and stuff, so they got to be the most eccentric weirdos you've ever fucking met.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, God, they're actually like
too much.
That's the thing. It was like every single fucking person, and you're like, no, like. It's just not working for me. You have some sane people. And like going back to the maintenance or going back to Ned, seriously.
Oh, how about that 2004 webcam stream, boys?
Oh, yeah. I know, right? Like,
it dated the film instantly. Instantly dated the film.
It's like Halloween Resurrection all over again.
Oh, I wanted to touch on the kills. Now, I think a lot of the kills in this film were way, way too dark. Like, you literally can't see anything.
Yeah.
You guys have that problem, too? I was like, holy shit, was that ever fucking dark? And they're really not good. You know, this film is not structured like the other one at all. This one has spread out, like, kills, you know, like your average slasher film. But even the body count in this one's mostly done in the last 15 minutes. I mean, there's really only about 7 or 8 kills in the entire film, and most of them come right at the end of the film. So there is a lot of downtime in this one also. But it's just lacking in everything. There's nothing there. I mean, when the investigative part of, you know, Nell's character, when she's looking at blueprints, is the most exciting thing in the fucking movie. You're like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, there's totally a fucking, yeah man, there's totally a building in there. You're like, yeah, fuck, this is gonna be awesome. And then she, like, you know, gets to the end and you're like, Coffin Baby.
Yeah, totally.
It's not cool, man.
Don't have a whole lot to say about this one left, dude.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, I did have a question. Okay. There was a kill where one of the girls gets shot in the throat with a nail gun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, please tell me that wasn't CGI blood coming out of her throat. I rewound it 4 or 5 times because I was like, holy shit, I don't know if that's real blood. And it looked like CG to me. I was like, are you fucking kidding?
No, I think that might have been – I think I remember that might have been CG. I can't
– Yeah, and I was like, are you kidding me? Why would they CG the fucking blood coming out of her neck? It made no sense. And actually, on that note, that same girl, when they go – okay, I get so annoyed in movies when all of a sudden a body's like, you know, tagged to a roof. Like, come on, man. Seriously. It just – everything about this
movie. Yeah, I think that there was a bit of like dark comedy that you normally see in like some of Hooper's films that I thought was all right.
That's like I think you might be giving it a little too much credit, though. Yeah. I don't really think it was actually intended because, I don't know, I think it's unintentionally funny, to be honest. But Who knows? I don't really know what else to say about this movie. I think
there's not much
the whole,
to say.
I think the whole explanation, the whole third act of the film is completely, for lack of a better word, it's fucking retarded. Like, I really, really disliked it. I thought it was absolutely horribly done and written. And it just really, I mean, there was a movie in there, like we said.
It's frustrating. There's some
cool things. And it's so frustrating to get, you know, that far, 90 fucking 4 minutes into a film and go, really? Fuck. Like, oh, it's so stupid. Just, it's very amateur and it's very disheartening, you know. But, yeah. I don't know. Ratings on this one, guys?
I'll give it a 4 out of 10. There's some interesting things going on, but it's not very good, really.
That's what you rate.
I actually gave it a 4.5.
Oh, no better than
that. I'm going to go slightly a bit higher with a 5 out of 10. I think it's a pretty average. I mean, it's frustrating, but I still think that it's watchable. And, you know, I didn't, like, dread every minute of it. It was pretty boring, average. I also want to say really quickly that if anybody's actually interested in these ratings, I am trying to compile the complete archive of everything that we've ever rated and stuff like that. And the whole Hall of Fame thing that we kind of talked about, that is why I'm doing it, because I've noticed we have found our first Hall of Fame film. I'm going to wait till I get to the part where I need to be to confirm that. But essentially any film that a combined rating between us three has been 28 or higher, it will be entered into the 22 Shots Hall of Fame. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now. But there will be a place where you guys can all look at, in alphabetical order, any of the ratings that we've ever done. I think it's kind of cool to have them all in one place, that you can just reference it.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I think that is going to do it. So, Jeremy, you want to throw out the intro?
Of course.
Or the outro.
So, thanks everybody again for listening to the 24th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. If you want to follow the man Moods himself, you could do so by clicking the subscribe button down below of this video. Or if you're listening to us on thedevilseyes.com, you could follow him at youtube.com/moods616. If you want to follow JP, aka the man who hates Pee Wee Herman, aka who picked the Colts over the Eagles, you could do so at youtube.com/mood616.
No.
Double shot, Jay. God, it's fucking late. Yeah, and if you want to follow me on my YouTube channel, you could do so at youtube.com/NESRoar22. Damn it, I did it so good last week. Of course, if you want to listen to us on thedevilseyes.com, you could do so at thedevilseyes.com. And if you want to send us any questions to an email, you could do so at 22shotsofmoodsandhorror
at gmail.com.
That's A-N-D, not the and symbol. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at 22 Shots Podcast. And that shall be it. We shall be back next week with the 25th
great review
episode,
of
The Battery, on the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. I hope everyone has a good rest of the week.
Hopefully we're doing the fucking battery. Damn. Can't find that shit anywhere.
We'll figure it out.
We will figure it out. But anyways, guys, we are outie. Peace.
See you later, everyone.